Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of The Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
And why you do that to yourself?
Oh, you don't really want to know that.
I do.
Well, if you must pry.
I must.
I don't know if you ever heard of me before, but I used to be called the Waco Kid.
The Waco Kid? He had the fastest hands in the West.
In the world.
Well, what happened?
Oh, well, it got so that every pissant prairie punk who thought he could shoot a gun would ride into town to try out the Waco Kid. I must have killed more men than Cecil B. DeMille. Got pretty gritty. I started to hear the word draw in my sleep. And one day, I was just walking down the street, and I heard a voice behind me say, "Reach for it, mister." And I spun around, and there I was, face to face with a 6-year-old kid. Well, I just threw my guns down and walked away. Little bastard shot me in the ass. So I limped to the nearest saloon, crawled inside a whiskey bottle, and I've been there ever since.
After the hour of one, and this the month of January in the year of our Lord 2011. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network. Thank you for joining us from high above the milk packing district here in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, mi amigos, mi compadres, my companions, my fellow travelers on the road of comedy. I was trying to do a two thing there. I was trying to do a comedy and chuckles.
And you failed.
Right out of the gate. Inadvertent conflation.
Maybe
which happens to men
as
they get older. It's just a thing that you can't dwell too much on. You got to stay in the game. You got to move on. One foot in front of the other. Looking back.
It happens to everyone, Rick Emerson.
Now and again. It's when I think too much about wicker furniture. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964 if you would like to join us today. 503-505-6964 if you'd like to get on board with your questions, comments, clarifications, observations, ruminations, ponderings, musings of an ironic nature, whatever it is you might have. 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. That is rick@rickemerson.com. Don Taylor can be reached electronically as well. That is Don, D-A-W-N, Don at rickemerson.com. If you want to message us via Skype, you can do that as well. It's Rick Emerson Show. It's Rick Emerson Show via Skype. The text box is up and running on the webpage and all that. Myriad options. Really, so many options that it just, you can't dwell too much on it. Your mind will just snap like a dry twig in the Serengeti. Coming up today, we got your Clown Watch, Geek Watch, Darwin Watch on the way today. Somebody wants to know if the Darwin Watch is from Florida.
I'm not sure.
I mean, it seems like there's a 50-50 chance at any given point that it could be.
No, it's from New York.
All right. So there may be another one lurking out there somewhere. Well, let's see. What else do we have coming up today? The top five songs about a crush on a celebrity, which is sort of, that's the best I can come up with. And it's just, it's not, That's not entirely accurate. That's not exactly the right way to put it, but that's as close as I can get.
So some people call that stalking.
Yeah. Well, one of them is sort of stalky. Actually, two of them are kind of stalky. There's one of them is just flat out. Let me just look at the list right here, and I can just give you a little bit of an overview without giving any of them away. So what I've got here, and I've already taken one off the list. I will say that today's top five is a true top five list. There's no sixth. There's no honorable mention on this because the song that was going to be the honorable mention, I think, just doesn't count. I think it just doesn't. I think you would have to be exceedingly generous. You would have to have an overly elastic sense of the song's theme to really grant it a place on the top five. So it is now actually just five songs. Looking for the top, we've got Creepy, Sweet, Creepy Again, could be Creepy, and then Decidedly Creepy once you know the backstory.
All right.
But I got to say that I think they all count. I think they are all songs about having a crush on a celebrity. So we're going to do that. And I did have a couple other rules, just not that anybody really cares about this, but just laying it all out. I think that one of the rules I had was that it could not be about someone with whom the singer or songwriter was in fact in a relationship already.
Okay.
So it couldn't be like Eric Clapton singing "Wonderful Tonight" to Patty Harrison or something.
Right.
And Layla's not on the list either because she wasn't really a celebrity. Not like in the grand scheme of things. Not like the other people on this list. So we'll get to that top five songs about crushes on a celebrity. Mr. Ryan White, music editor from the Oregonian, is going to be here. We'll talk to our good friend Aaron Duran. He'll be here with the Week in Geek, and we are going to return to the glorious days of yesteryear when we were engaged in the Name That Snack contest. So we've revised it.
I remember that.
Here's what we've done. We've actually, and I can't even take credit for this. So this is actually Cheryl. So Cheryl Kanakoa has crafted a better way. And by better, I mean something that the audience isn't going to guess like 10 seconds. Really, while the sentence is leaving my mouth, they were guessing it. So we've ratcheted the difficulty. Not a lot, but I would say just enough to make it sporting. Just enough and sporting, I mean, at least for us. And it also is less work, because the way it was like every single day we were just having to, like, you know, contact somebody. Yes, jackass, you've won a big bag of stuff with your guest that we were talking about, Mike and Ike's. In any event, you know what nobody really eats a lot of? I talk about circus peanuts, but here's the other thing. Those burnt peanuts. Who eats those? Who buys those?
I really like those, but I don't ever buy them.
But you don't ever buy them. That's the thing. They're a thing that you'll eat if they're around, but you don't ever, like, you've never once gotten in your car, like,
beans.
I gotta go to the store and buy me some Red Hots. Nobody ever does that. But it's like, but if they are there, but if they're around, right, there's certain candies that you will consume. If they're like, and here's when you get those things. You get those in small individual packets as part of a larger collection of something, like in a Valentine's Day package, or like when you were at school, they would, like, you know, they'd be like you win some little prize. It was a bunch of little packets of candy. Here's another thing nobody ever goes to the store just to buy: sweet tarts.
See, I was going to say Smarties, which are very similar. But on Halloween, you get the little individual packages of Smarties, and you're like, ooh, Smarties. But the rest of the year, you never go out and actually just buy Smarties.
And I think you're just the one who goes, ooh, Smarties. Oh. I don't really know that anybody else in America does.
I like
those
Smarties.
Are the same people who say, ooh, Necco wafers. And I don't really know that those people exist outside of that side of the table over there.
I also love the weird off-flavor Tootsie Rolls that you only get in Halloween collections.
Such as?
Orange, vanilla.
Get out. Those don't
cherry.
Exist. Really?
Yes, but you only get them in those big, the little itsy-bitsy tiny Halloween versions of them.
The big itsy-bitsy tiny.
The little itsy-bitsy tiny ones. And they come in those big bags of mixed Halloween candy.
Are these
candy
actual that you Tootsie
get
Rolls?
Yes, they are from the Tootsie Roll people.
All right.
But I don't think you can buy them in big sizes. I think they only come in tiny little bite-sized ones in the Halloween collections.
This is sort of like how I think about the people who make those Paz Easter egg things, and I wonder what they do the rest of the year. Like, what is that? Is that company, are they like teachers or something? Are they just closed for business the rest of the time?
And really, all that Paz is just little tablets of compressed dye.
And like a wire thing that you stick the egg in.
Yeah, and really cheap stickers that
That's
don't
it.
Actually stick to the egg.
No. Hey, did you know that M&M's, the M&M company, M&M Mars, they now make an M&M's variety that is, it's autumnal?
You mean color-wise?
Yeah. But it's with colors that you can, again, that you can't get the rest of the year. Because there's one in there that's like a tan M&M, but it's not the same tan that they used to have. It is a lighter shade of tan. It's almost like a taupe or like a sand, like a sandstone color.
You know, you can go online to the M&M website and you can order M&Ms in pretty much any color you want. and combinations of any color you want. And they will even print things on them that you
want
printed on them.
Well, that is the and they actually unveiled that around the same time that they were selling those Kiss M&Ms for like $6.99 an ounce. So it is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's Monday, January 17th, 2011. Draw near that ye might be amused by the following items. So yeah, Clown Watch, Geek Watch, Darwin Watch, top five songs about a crush on a celebrity, Ryan White from the Oregonian, Aaron Duran with The Week in Geek. Don Taylor is tracking the following headlines for you on this Monday.
Three women are arrested for illicitly selling Four Loko. A guy is arrested for drunk driving on a mule. And Australian police are forced to warn that blow-up sex toys are not recognized flotation devices.
This is where?
Australia.
Okay. Did Australia the same place? Didn't they establish some porn panel there to decide what kind of porn you could bring into the country and what
yes.
kind you couldn't?
Yes.
And that was like you couldn't have the... Was that the same place that outlawed small-bosomed women in porn?
I think so.
Because they were afraid they would look like you were humping it out with a Filipino boy?
Yes.
Or, you know, whatever. All right. It is 503-505-6964. Today's program brought to you by EH Vending. Find out more about them by going to ehvending.com. If you are going to be starting your own business or if you got a business and your employees are just falling over and dropping dead, like so many flies out there in the work area because there's no food to be had. And suddenly, you know, you say to yourself, my God, what have I done all this time? I could have been providing them with Slim Jims or, you know, whatever. You can contact EH Vending, get your vend on there in the work area. Or if you got a vendor but you're unhappy with them, you feel like they're giving you the, you know, just giving you the shaft in terms of how much you're paying. You don't feel like you're getting a good value for your money. Or you just, it's that thing where you just like you leave a message, you're waiting for a guy to come out and service the machine, he just never gets back to you. It's like days and days and days. No, this is America, the land of opportunity, the land of choice. From sea to shining sea, the options available to you are myriad. So there's you know, no reason to put up with bad service. You contact EH Vending. Go to ehvending.com for more details. And there you go. This I got a case of mush mouth going on right now. It's my fault for actually trying to eat something between the two shows. So what we're going to do is... I'm going to distract everybody. It's not important. I'm going to distract everybody by asking you what you did this weekend, which is really... Not that I don't care. I mean, I care. But it's also a thinly veiled excuse for me to drink some water over here. Hello, Don. What did you do this weekend?
Well, while you were drinking your water, I have a audio folder for you in the Dropbox, if you will pull that, because that's pertinent. I did a couple of things. First of all, I know I'm a little late to the party here, but I finally started using Pandora.
I thought that's what you said earlier, that like when we finished up Legion of News, I know we were talking about something rather than you go, Ed, I'm using this thing called Pandora, which is great. I mean, it's
I never used it before.
Plug that into the dashboard of your horseless carriage out front, do you?
I
let me tell you about a new shoe called Crocs, Don. I think that could be the exciting new footwear for you. No, go ahead.
I just always assumed it was something that I had to subscribe to and pay for because people do. And
because that's usually how quality programming is received,
yeah.
Is it not?
And I was looking at it on the iPhone, and there's a free version of it, so I thought I would give it a try because I've never used Pandora before.
You're so cute.
And I know that all the kids use the Pandora.
Or used to.
But no, it was delightful. I kind of found it enjoyable that I would say, I like Elvis Costello. And then it says, really? Well, perhaps you would also like this song by Queen and this song by Talking Heads and this song by, Joe Jackson. And I said, well, yes, Pandora, I do like all of those songs. Thank you very much. And so I've been listening to that and I was enjoying it. And then I was playing with like the jazz, doing a little jazz station for myself and saying, yes, I want to listen to Miles Davis. And then hitting the little thumbs down and going, no, no fusion jazz, Pandora. And then it says, okay, Don, I will learn that, and I will not make you listen to that evil fusion jazz.
It's just like when my mom had her first TiVo in 2002. By the way, even then, she was 67 years of age. And it's amazing. I can give it a thumbs up or a thumbs down, and if I don't want to watch things with Anthony Bourdain, then he won't appear on my television anymore. And I said, welcome to the exciting world of 2002, Mom. I'm glad that you have finally gotten on board with this. Woe be to those who have not embraced the new technology.
And the other thing I did this weekend, I won't talk about Pandora anymore because obviously...
Did you figure out how to calculate the wattage or something in terms of, you know, the brightness of your phone in terms of candle power?
I also downloaded an app to help me calculate the amount of carbohydrates I'm eating each day because I am trying to... I decided this weekend to cut crap out of my diet because I've been living on crap.
On crap.
Ever since before Christmas.
Do you really need an iPhone to tell you what crap is? You know?
I...
Vodka and trail mix. Yes.
My problem, and it's one of these things of having this sort of Jekyll Hyde, you know, personality. On the one hand, I had an eating disorder once, and so I have this fear of becoming, like, weirdly obsessive about food. But the other thing is, I can't, like, actually keep an eye on and control my food intake unless I become obsessive about it. Because it all just starts creeping back. I start going, I have this real problem with eating simple carbohydrates. And so I'll just go, I'll just have this potato. And then, it's okay if I have a bowl of cereal for breakfast. And the next thing I know, I'm living on fudge and chips out of the snack box. And so,
and of course, this is the worst place for you to work, by the way, because we are just nothing but enablers here. I mean, there's a huge, I mean, right, there's a, it actually says on the side, large box. There's a huge box of snack foods from EH Vending, for which we are grateful, by the way.
And they're delicious.
And
they
then
really
above
are.
That is just nothing but shelf after shelf of alcohol.
Right.
And then in the kitchen, there's just pallets. I mean, I think Greg and Sarah got four cases of Mickey's malt liquor dropped off on Friday. And by the way, there was some pizza in the refrigerator. So, I mean, it really is.
No.
This is
yeah.
not the place for you. You ought to be doing the show from inside, like a locked metal room, and just piping your thoughts out to us via a wire.
Well, I have to actually be obsessive about it and keep track of it and log what I eat and, you know, pack in my own food when I come to work. So, you know, like I had some tuna salad earlier, you know, so. But yeah, so I got this app because I used to use, I lost like 35 pounds at one point and I used this thing on the computer called FitDay. But FitDay doesn't have an app, so I've been looking for something that's similar to FitDay where you just input your food and it calculates all of the nutritional, you know, stuff, how much protein and carbohydrates and what have fat you ate in your food.
Now,
and how
do
many
you
calories.
Enter that? Do you type it in?
It actually has a database of food that you can search. So you, like, put in, you say, I ate, you know, like this morning, I ate three pieces of bacon.
Now, it seems,
so, you
okay,
know,
so I guess.
So you go bacon, and then, you know.
I guess that makes sense. Because I was going to ask if you could use that barcode scanner thing. But I guess if it's just like a, if it's like a loose food, in other words, if it's like a grapefruit, that's probably not going to work.
And there is a nutritional app. I think it, I don't, it may or may not be the one from the livestrong.com website. But there is one of those that actually has a thing where you can scan barcodes.
Awesome.
If you, but my thing is I'm trying not to eat processed foods. So it's that the barcode
Good
thing
luck
is
with
probably
that.
Well
living inside a processed country.
I have eaten that way before and I felt much healthier and I dropped weight and my moods were better and my blood sugar was more stable and it was great. You know, just cutting out as much processed sugar and flour and stuff like that as I possibly could.
I'm not trying to be a negative, Nelly. I realize
no.
I'm not being very supportive by this. I don't mean to
That's
be
okay.
I don't mean to be Johnny negative about your prospect. I'm just saying that it's. I recognize what difficulty there is in going out into the world and deciding that you were going to eat things that are relatively healthful because like 90% of the food they sell everywhere at every restaurant, especially at certain kinds of like a drive-thru or something, or you know, or at the supermarket, everything is just processed and you know, homogenized and just saturated with like 100 different kinds of fat. So there's that, and then also you know, just that there's so many things that are marketed as being healthy
yes.
that are not. That they sort of you know that they position themselves, they posture as though they are good for you, when in reality you know it's just the same old crap.
Yeah, and if you're trying to like keep the amount of simple carbohydrates you know down. And basically, you know, attempting to get like my whole carbohydrate load from fruits and vegetables, but what we think is healthy and what is considered healthy is not necessarily healthy to that sort of diet. So it's like people go, have some rice. Rice is good for you. It's like, well, no, rice is starch. Rice is not, you know, here, pasta. Pasta is healthy. It's like, well, no, pasta is processed flour. I'm trying not to eat processed flour. So it, you know, it can be daunting, but. Yeah, but I spent much of the weekend just sort of detoxing from living on carbohydrates and just yesterday just had like a violent headache and just felt horrible for most of the day. But I knew if I got through it, and I was right, I woke up this morning and I feel like great today. I feel better
Weekends
than I
Weekends with
weeks.
You sound like such a joy. Last weekend all you did is just sat in your room just covered in used Kleenexes sobbing and screaming at your husband. And then
right.
this weekend is just sitting there just detoxing from fat and just having a headache and being grumpy.
I spend my weekends being miserable so I can bring the best of myself to you.
Well, and I appreciate
Monday
that.
Monday through Friday.
No, Rick Emerson and his audience, we do appreciate that sacrifice. And I think more importantly, we appreciate the sacrifice that Patrick obviously makes for us.
He does.
Have you considered the possibility that his gallbladder just attempted to kill him? or just
to need, get him away from me.
Needed a vacation of some kind and just reached up and just started to throttle his liver just to get him out of the house for a while.
Oh, I definitely considered the idea that just living with me
is
was so
toxic.
Horrible that just made him sick. Yes, I did.
Okay. Yeah, awesome.
And because I want to talk about this, I watched the Golden Globes last night, which... has been now keep in mind that this the Golden Globes are put on by the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, which is an association of people who write about Hollywood. They are Hollywood writers,
but they're not here, right? Is that the deal?
Right.
Like
it's
some
here.
Guy in Paris who writes about Hollywood.
Yeah, like the president of the Hollywood Foreign Press Association is a film critic in Australia.
Right.
So they're kind of stupid awards. They're only like, we talked about this a little bit on Legion News. There's only 90 members of the Hollywood Foreign Press, and I don't even think they're required to all vote in the awards. So usually, generally, if you look at things, there's like six of anything in a category. If votes are wildly split, just like, you know, five or six votes in one way, direction or another can make something win. So it's like a couple of classrooms full of teenagers getting together and giving what are considered prestigious awards. And the whole thing exists so that these guys can hang out with movie stars once a year.
You just get loaded.
But, of course, last night was, I think, the second year in a row that Ricky Gervais hosted. And he was given, you know, carte blanche to just do his thing and to say what he wanted. And, of course, now the morning after, all of the, unsurprisingly, the show business writers are calling him horrible. Nikki Fink said that this was the meanest Golden Globes ever.
She seems like a really unlikable person anyway.
She really, really
does. Reading
her
column, she seems like a horrible human being.
The Atlantic called his mean-spirited opening monologue the worst kind of roast, unnecessary mood-killing, and only occasionally funny. I gave you some stuff. There, I have some sound bites there. If you want to play one of these, just let me see. Play the first one from Ricky Gervais. It's Gervais 01.
Right,
and that'll give you, actually play 02. This will give you a good idea of the jokes from his monologue.
Let's see here. This is, what is it called? Gervais 02?
Yeah.
Looking to see where that might actually be.
It's in the Dropbox in a folder called...
Right, Gold no, I understand that. Oh, okay. I'm just looking here.
Oh,
the,
right.
Yeah, you didn't give me anything called Gervais 02, but thanks for playing.
I didn't?
No.
That's not possible.
Yes, well, okay. It's not possible except that it's the case.
Oh,
charade you are, Don Taylor. Now the pupil becomes the teacher. In any event, you're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program here at rickemersonshow.com. Thank you for joining us, friends and neighbors.
It's right there.
I'm looking at it over here. It's not there. I'm looking at... You can come look at the screen if you like. It's it says Downey 1, Downey 2, Gervais 1, Gervais 3.
Oh. Okay,
Gervais 4.
Okay, we'll try Gervais 3.
1, 3, 4. Now, there's something missing there.
Try 3, then.
Uh-huh.
Try 3.
You sure you don't want to save this to the actual news segment? Because we're off to such a roaring start.
Well, okay, let's save it
also,
for the
Aaron
news.
Also, Aaron Duran is waiting.
All right.
It's okay. I'm just saying, it's almost like the universe doesn't want us to do this
no,
right now.
No, let's not do this right now. Let's move on to something else.
How do you feel this opening segment is gone?
Up until this part, pretty well.
Hmm.
I liked the part of us talking about candy.
Okay, well, fair enough. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. Ryan White going to join us here in just a bit. We'll talk to Aaron Duran in one moment. Later on, Clown Watch, Geek Watch, Darwin Watch, top five songs about a crush on a celebrity. And I didn't even get a chance to... I haven't even had a chance to talk about this thing with Facebook. We'll talk about going to Aaron Duran's comic book release, which actually happened on Saturday. I actually succeeded in repairing part of my car this weekend, by the way. If anybody...
By yourself?
That guy who posts on Facebook occasionally, the guy who lives obviously somewhere in my neighborhood and stalks me and then makes observations on my Facebook page about what I'm doing at that particular moment. I'm surprised he didn't note something about Rick Emerson is attempting to fix something in his car with a pair of needle-nose pliers. What strange world is this? So, we will get to all that here in just a moment. Without further ado... Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson radio program from geekinthecity.com, our good friend Mr. Aaron Duran joining us on this Monday. Hello, sir.
Hello, how's it going?
How are you, my fine feathered friend? What is up in your Monday? Congratulations, by the way, on having a great turnout for your comic book release, which happened this past Saturday for La Brujilla, which is the first comic book from Geek in the City Comics. It was quite something.
cool. Thanks. Yeah, and it was a lot of fun being out there that night.
It was great, actually. So I was talking to, I think it was our friend Cable Hashitani was there, and I went there and I bought, I don't know, a couple copies of the comic itself and then a print, and then there was you and James Sinclair, who's the graphic artist, and then your wife Jen, who did, I think she did the lettering for it.
She did. And then, yeah, she did the lettering and the editing.
And Cable and I were noting that all we really had to do then was just to kill you guys on the way out of the store, and the comic would probably, I mean, it would go up in value like tenfold. I mean, that would have instantly, you would have become immortal, and then I would have gotten an immediate, like, 1,000% return on my investment.
See, there's a part of me that approves of that plan, but except the whole part where then I would be dead.
So here's what I came up with, and I think we discussed this a little bit on Saturday. I was suggesting that what you guys ought to do, and then you can get really meta about it at some point, and you can actually create a comic about this whole scheme. You should actually, you and James and Jen, should actually create alternate, you should create supplementary false personas. And those personas, those names, the people who don't even exist, they can be the ones who actually create the comic, and then they can be killed off. And then you guys can just sit back and wait for the checks to come in. Like, it could actually take a place at an event that doesn't actually transpire in the real world. It can be a complete and total fabrication. How your alter ego, like Hector de Plume, Hector is the one who creates the comic book, and then bam, he was just hit by a steam shovel as he was leaving the store.
And then later, if you want to do another comic, you could just find one that had that they didn't know existed, that had been like under his bed,
working from notes.
Well, no, we could just pull off the VC Andrews thing and say taken from the notes
exactly
of Alessandro Binano.
And then you can do what that Stieg Larsson's girlfriend guy is doing, which is hold the publisher hostage for like $9 billion to turn over your dead boyfriend's laptop that has his uncompleted fourth novel in it. And then you can actually go back and create a true life, true crime comic book describing how the caper was pulled off.
Wow.
It's a good thing this isn't a show or anything. We're giving away absolutely everything that's planned.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, but look, I'm saying if somebody's subscribing to the show, they can probably keep their mouth shut. You know, they know how to keep a secret.
And they know we'll punish them if they let it leak.
That's right. So congratulations. And if people want to buy, some people have said that they've missed the release. They were not able to be there on Saturday. If somebody wants to buy a copy of La Brujia, your first comic, where can they get that?
Right now, locally, you can get it at Bridge City Comics. You can get it at Excalibur Comics. I think you can get it at Cosmic Monkey Comics very soon. Hopefully, Things on the World will be carrying it very soon. If you don't live in Portland, you can just log on to geekinthecity.com, and I have a little buy it button right on there. So
awesome.
We can ship it out to you.
Excellent. What else is happening in the world of geekery?
The other kind of things that caught my eye, one thing is not really geekery, but Starbucks is adding an even larger size of coffee called like the Junta size, which I don't think that's the name of the size of the coffee. But they figured it out that this new coffee cup is actually bigger than the human stomach. That's good for you.
I don't understand. Is there a need for that? That's like how Apple has that display that has more pixels than the human eye can register. Is there something people were really calling for?
I don't know, but yeah, they've just decided. I think it launched today. It's the because you know they have the tall and the grande and the venti, which I hate saying because that both just means large in two different languages. And then yeah, the other one's called the Junta or the Gigantor or something, but it is larger than the human stomach.
How many ounces? What actual size are we talking about?
Oh man, it's something like 84 ounces.
That's awesome.
It's like Big Gulp territory, man. It's crazy.
But at least with the Big Gulp, and I don't understand the whole giant Big Gulp things, but there are those I see people go into 7-Eleven with those giant plastic 7-Eleven tankards. But at least those are really thick, so they kind of hold in the cold, and you can put ice in your drink. With a giant coffee from Starbucks, it's going to be cold before you even get a quarter of the way through it.
I mean, this is really
not even good to begin with.
It's like an extra helping of something scorched and bad that you don't want to begin with. So we're not even really in Big Gulp territory. We're in like full on Double Gulp territory.
And then people aren't even going to be buying coffee. We're talking about people buying like 84-ounce caramel macchiatos, which will have as many calories as they need for like the entire week.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, if you think the two boxes of mac and cheese, I mean, as horrible for you as mac and cheese might be, which it is, at least there's something in there your body can process. What the hell is in a Junta Science Caffo Macchiato that your body actually needs?
Okay, I'm trying to find some sort of news about this or something, you know, like something relating to the actual
I think if you check out Gizmodo.com, I think they've got the story on the news site.
Here we go. Starbucks thinks bigger is better, and they'll show you when the chain rolls out a new bigger drink size this fall. This, by the way, is from, I swear to God, this is from a newspaper called Toledo on the Move. The coffee chain says it will offer its Trenta, T-R-E-N-T-A, size drinks by May 3rd, 2011. It doesn't say how big it is, but it does. Okay, but it is the same size as a 7-Eleven Big Gulp.
That's just insane.
So that means it is it's at least 32 ounces. And that's assuming that the Big Gulp has not increased in size over the years, which it probably hasn't. But that is at least – that's 32 ounces, which doesn't – especially when you consider the fact that Starbucks doesn't really – Starbucks isn't even really in the coffee business. I mean, Starbucks is just in the business of selling Americans milk. That's really what it is. And so the idea that somebody needs 32 ounces of milk in a single sitting is just ridiculous.
Yeah, a venti mocha – at Starbucks, that's 20 ounces, and that's 490 calories.
Awesome.
So a 30 – I mean, come on.
So this would be 600 at least. This is like that time that I went to the Pete's the coffee shop in Seattle where they're required to put the caloric content on things, and there was like a Snickers mudslide coffee mocha something rather, and I swear to God it was 1,800 calories. Like I almost wanted to get it and just put it down in one single gulp just because of that, just because it was sort of gloriously awful.
Sometimes I feel
it's like drinking three Big Macs.
Yeah.
Sometimes I honestly feel like people who don't like the taste of coffee should not be allowed to buy things that and call them coffee.
Oh, man. All right. Well, you know, here's the thing. Even though this isn't geek news as such, you did choose wisely by bringing this to our attention because I had I'm not some guy who's just, I'm not opposed to Starbucks just like because you're opposed to it. Like they've never done anything to me. I don't have any problem with them except that they have terrible coffee, in my opinion. And, you know, but other than that, like, who cares? It doesn't matter to me. But it just, I never would have known about this. This is a thing that, I mean, goddamn, I got to tell you that I went through this period and I had to stop because it was when I was unemployed, which is always like, that is the time sometimes when you make the worst financial decisions. I don't know what, maybe it's just me, but I don't think so. When you're unemployed, I think you reach this point where you think, well, I am so effed. Like, what is a little bit more effing, you know? It's like, and I thank God that I have left the stage of my life when I sort of thought like that because I would get into some bad situation where I just didn't have a lot of money or I was between gigs and you'd think, well, look, I'm already broke. I might as well just become ever so slightly more broke. And so I went through this little streak, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago, where I would buy at the store those little, like, bottled Frappuccino things from Starbucks, which even then, that was like in 1997, and I think they were $3.80. I mean, it's just – and you're basically just buying, like, a shot glass, you know, of coffee. I mean, that's more or less – it's just ridiculous.
You're buying the most expensive chocolate milk ever.
Yeah. I mean, the profit margin that Starbucks has is really – they're geniuses. I mean, there's been a lot of talk the last few months about how, you know, they've had a little bit of a reversal and a slowdown. But, I mean, God, I mean, even – you know, a bad financial quarter for Starbucks is still so much better than, like, any other business you could possibly name. So good for them. Well done, Starbucks. That's fantastic. I don't even really know what else could top that. But what else is happening out there?
I mean, nothing really can top that. There's a couple other kind of like little geek events happening, not locally, but some news that just dropped down. Darren Aronofsky, the director who did the horrible movie The Fountain,
and Black Swan.
Black Swan, and he did The Pie. A few years ago, he was actually way before Christopher Nolan. He was actually drafted to do the Batman relaunch, you know, in cinema. And he wanted to do this kind of Batman Year One take where the minute Bruce Wayne's parents were killed, he ran away and he grew up in a tiny apartment over a place called Big Al's Garage. And eventually Big Al would have gotten killed and little Al would have raised him as a son. And that became Alfred. It was just really this completely bizarre 70s trashy cinema, you know, mixed by way of Frank Miller. And clearly it never happened. But with Aronofsky directing the new Wolverine movie, DC has actually approached him to take his script and turn it into a graphic novel.
Really?
And it's going to be so bizarre. I mean, he had moments where, like, Batman was going to have a giant fro sticking out of his cowl. I mean, it's just nuts. Curious to see how that's all going to go down on that one. And then the other thing I wanted to bring up, this came out last June. This really, I can't believe I'm going to say this. This really well shot and actually quite creepy fan movie about relaunching the Mortal Kombat movies came out starring and here's where it just gets better and better, starring Michael J. White and Jeri Ryan. But it was actually really, really good, really well done. It was dark and messed up. had something like 10 million viewers on YouTube, and now that's getting turned into a web series starting next year.
How is it that a fan movie for Mortal Kombat had Jerry Ryan in it?
Apparently she was
Did she know she was in the film, or was this like a Chubby Rain kind of a thing where they were just shooting her from across the street?
When this came out, this is when she was still, I mean, not that she's not known now, but she was still relatively known at the time.
This is the gripping sequence where Sub-Zero looks through her bathroom window late at night to see her shower.
Yeah, no, she played, you know, shockingly, she played Sonya Blade, who worked for the police department. But it's actually, it's a really well-done little fan film. It's like an eight-minute-long fan film. And I guess for the last year, they've been pitching it, and Warner Brothers wants to make it a web series. So
I got to see. Am I misremembering the Mortal Kombat? Because Christopher Lambert, the Highlander guy. So he's in the
He's French, you Philistine.
Is Christopher Lee in the? Is he in the Mortal Kombat movies, or am I misremembering that?
No, you are. Chasing Amy's Christopher Lee.
No,
wait, that's Jason Lee.
Yes,
which Christopher Lee?
Christopher,
like Dracula.
Christopher Lee. You know, Count Dooku.
No. Uh-uh.
Or wait, am I? No, I'm thinking of somebody else. No, I'm. Hold on. Let everybody stop. I am now, just now in my head, I made a little skip from Christopher Lee to Peter Cushing. Okay, let's stop. Christopher Lee, though, as in, you know, as in Star Wars, as in he was in, Christopher Lee himself was in...
Yeah, the path of pain.
Yeah, and he was in a lot of the Hammer films. He was in, and he is, Saruman. So, is that guy in the Mortal Kombat films?
No. Uh-uh.
Okay, so I'm just thinking of something else. Here's the only thing that good that came out of the Mortal Kombat movies was the soundtracks, which I actually quite like because if nothing else, the Mortal Kombat soundtracks are sort of like the soundtracks to the two Hackers films in that they are a perfect representation. They're a great time capsule of a musical period when they were telling us that electronica was going to be the sort of the next, you know, the next great music form that was going to just take over everything. So you get these weird like 9.5 minute like club tracks done by Tracy Lords or somebody, which just continued that trend of techno songs that only consisted of somebody going and like breathing really heavily over a thing that went on.
Yeah, the Mortal Kombat soundtrack, all the sound effects were nothing but the different characters going like
and then occasionally you'd hear the guy going finish him, and then it would just, and you felt like you had to start clutching for a glow stick somewhere. So it was all very bizarre.
And it was awesome.
Hey, whatever. Speaking of fan films, and then we've gotten so totally and completely off the path here. Whatever happened to the guy that did Batman Dead End?
You know, it's funny. I play that in the store a lot of the times. He did one more fan film called, I think he called it World's Finest, and it wasn't that good. And how the story goes is that Batman Dead End was such a huge hit. I mean, he showed it at Comic-Con. I remember it made the cover of that, I don't think the movie's magazine's around anymore, but like DVD Empire.
Right.
And I remember the cover actually said the greatest Batman movie you could never buy.
I remember, now this is before Heath Ledger, but I remember seeing Batman Dead End and thinking that that was the best, that it was the best Joker I had ever seen, for one thing.
Alexander Koenig, Walter Koenig's son.
Yeah. I remember thinking like, this is it. Like, this is the guy they got to get to do the next Batman
film. Yeah. So apparently like it was so huge that he actually got a sit down because this came out just a couple years after Batman and Robin. So Warner Brothers could give two rips for another Batman movie. They were still licking their wounds. This movie was so huge that it got him what he wanted. It got him a sit down with the Warner Brothers heads. But over the course of that year, people had been blowing, you know, kind of so much smoke up about how awesome this movie was that when he sat down with Warner Brothers, he made so many outlandish demands that within that first meeting, they said, you know what? Never mind. How about you leave and never look back?
How about we validate your parking and we call it good?
Yeah. Bye.
Well, that's unfortunate. Okay. Well, because that's one of those things that every now and again I'll stop and it'll just pop up in my brain for no reason, like an expired parking meter flag. It's going to go ding.
I love to spring that movie on people that somehow have never seen it before.
Yeah.
And it starts like a really solid kind of like Batman and Joker flick, you know, and then Alien shows up.
Yeah,
and then Predator shows up. And people are like, "What the hell is going on?" It's kind of great to spring on folks.
Yeah, my friend Mike Chase over at KWJJ showed that to me, and he was just like, "He's like, I got to show you the greatest Batman film that you've ever seen in your entire life." And I didn't know what to expect. And by the end of it, I was just like, "Who is this?" I was convinced that it had been done sort of undercover by a name director, you know, by somebody who was known, somebody who was prominent.
No, he was like a stunt coordinator that wanted to use this as a resume. He spent like $40,000 on it, shot it in 35mm. Then shot himself in the foot.
Well done. All right, then.
Yeah.
GeekintheCity.com is your one-stop emporium, your one-stop shopping and your repository for all things nerd-like and so forth. Mr. Aaron Duran, congratulations again on the launch of the book, and we will talk to you next Monday, sir.
Cool.
All right, there you go. That's Aaron Durand, you can hear him, by the way, this afternoon as well at funemploymentradio.com. Hello, Don Taylor.
Hello. I have a little bit of an update on the Starbucks thing, by the way. There was a Reuters story back in March. They started testing the 31-ounce drinks at Starbucks. And apparently, they're the ones that they are rolling out now are the ones they were testing back in March. They're actually for cold beverages.
Like iced coffee.
Right. Iced coffee and iced tea. Because they started testing them, particularly in the South, because like iced tea, big honking things of iced tea are very, very popular in the South. At 7-Eleven, McDonald's in the Southern United States offers 32-ounce sweet tea for $1 to get people to come into McDonald's for their tea. So I think Starbucks was feeling the pinch from people, like particularly in the warmer months,
well, is it just
not
because
getting their giant iced teas or just not getting anything.
Well, and does it have to be that large because even if you chill it, it warms up really quickly, and so it's got to be kept cold, and so that requires ice, which requires a larger glass?
Yeah, because they the venti cup that they use for iced coffee and iced tea is 24 ounces instead of 20 ounces to accommodate the ice.
Okay, see, I can get with this because I am an iced tea enthusiast. I really... Laura can tell you that I really become, you know, among the, do you ever just stop and recognize like how lucky you are that that you are with a spouse who is tolerant of just the million and one ways in which you are just an unpleasant and difficult person to be with
every day.
And that's my thing too. And it's like I become some horrible combination of like Paul Rudd and Woody Allen when we go out, just because I'll get very persnickety about certain things. And one of the things I am incredibly particular about is iced tea. Because she'll take me and we'll go to a restaurant and the guy said, and for Monsieur, and I will say, do you have iced tea, please? And he will say, yes. And I'll say, is it brewed or is it like from a mix or a powder or a syrup or some crap? Or like do you brew it in the kitchen? And the thing is, they will always lie to you. They'll say, no, we brew it. And then I'll just, and I've gotten to the point where I no longer take their word for it. Like I will actually have to sort of go, like if I can see it sitting in the fridge in a pitcher where it's been pre-made, obviously, or if I can actually see... But they're clever sometimes because there's those things that look like iced tea brewing urns, but really it's just a thing from Lipton or Nest Tea or whatever, and it's just like the syrup, and it just tastes terrible.
Or even worse than the syrup, it mixes powder with hot water, and then it goes over the ice.
That's just awful.
It's terrible.
It's terrible. So just as a well done glass of iced tea is one of life's true pleasures, a badly done glass of iced tea is just repellent. And the other thing that people don't realize is that. If you make iced tea and then let it sit at room temperature for very long at all, or even if you refrigerate it but it's there for more than a day or two, it gets this terrible rank like olive oil taste to it. And so I'm kind of a stickler for it. So when I find a place that has really good iced tea, during the summer months especially, they really get my loyalty. For example, improbably enough, McDonald's has fantastic iced tea because they actually do brew it. They brew it in small batches too because they don't sell a lot of it. So they actually, there's a guy who just brews regular tea, they dump it into a pitcher, they stick it in the fridge, and it chills over the course of a couple hours, and then they pour it into your glass. Now, at some point, that will probably go away, but McDonald's at this point still has really good iced tea. The other great thing about McDonald's, it comes in a huge-ass glass. Starbucks, though, I have quit going there because even though the iced tea tastes really good, you get it. And of course, it's on it's like July and it's 110 degrees outside and you're really thirsty and you pay your $9 and you get your glass of iced tea and you go, and then it's gone.
Right.
Because the entire glass is filled up with ice. So this actually makes a lot of sense. So I've gone from not understanding this to ridiculing it to now embracing the idea wholeheartedly.
Well, and the thing with going to Starbucks, and I say this as someone who used to work at Starbucks, you could order your iced tea and then ask them to go light on the ice because the iced tea has been brewed and then put into the refrigerator.
It has been chilled. It's not hot.
Yes.
Okay, because that's why I don't do that.
And the thing about how it sits for a while and it gets bitter and nasty, I always really like this at Starbucks. The way they would do the iced coffee is you had to change out the coffee in the coffee urns every few hours because the coffee's always got to be fresh, the house coffee.
Awesome.
And then you would drain it out into a pitcher, and then that would go into the fridge to be the new iced coffee in the fridge. And then you'd change that. So that got changed out really regularly. And it was the same thing with the iced tea. You'd make iced tea in the morning, but it was like mid-afternoon or something. The iced tea would get dumped and remade again because you have to have it. It can't sit. It can't get old. It gets bitter and nasty.
That's fantastic. See, now, that is another one of those things where I say that people reflexively dislike Starbucks for some reason. But I don't really care for their coffee because I just think it tastes a little burnt to me, but in terms of their actual internal quality control about how they handle things, I've never heard anything but good stuff about them, and that's another example of that. So That's fantastic. See, so that means that when, and I hope they do that here, when summer rolls around, that they actually launch this large iced tea, because they have fantastic black tea. But it's, again, that thing of like, you feel like you got horked because you're paying $3 for something that's, you know, that it's gone in two swigs or whatever. So good for them. If they could just bring back that Chantico, then everybody would be happy.
What was the was that the hot chocolate?
That's a thing that exists only to be a pop culture reference. I don't even really care if they bring it back. It's a thing that I just do. That's my little Dennis Miller.
Was that super?
It's like a brownie thick mix in a glass, basically.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, I had something very similar to that, by the way. After Aaron had his Geek in the City launch at Bridge City Comics, and we stopped at Ruby Jewel, the ice cream store, uh-huh. like two shut things down from Bridge City, because Patrick wanted ice cream, and I saw they had hot chocolate, and so I ordered. It was salted. This was like my last hurrah of the sugar before I detoxed, by the way. I think this was the thing that tipped me over the edge where I went, I got to stop doing this. Because I ordered their hot chocolate, and I got, thank God I got a small one, and I got the salted caramel hot chocolate. And it was like that Chantica stuff. It's like actual, it's not hot cocoa, it's hot chocolate. It's made with melted chocolate.
Wow.
And it was so thick and so perfect, and it had caramel and a little bit of sea salt in it, and I was drinking going,
just crying,
this is the best thing I've ever had in my whole life. And I had like this crazy endorphin and sugar rush from it, and it was just awesome. And Patrick's like, can I have another sip of that? I'm like, no, have ice cream. No.
It's one of those things where you're so in love with the beverage, but then you're just filled with self-loathing at the same time, and you're just sort of like crying and in happiness and sadness all at once.
I don't even want to know what the nutritional value is of any of this, but it's so good.
That's one of those things where you get the perfectly made hot chocolate or dessert or whatever, and you do feel like Augustus Gloop just drinking the waterfall churned, you know, just eating mouthfuls of swudge down by the chocolate river.
Yeah, this was kind of like the Chantica stuff, a little, not quite that thick and gloopy, but it was, yeah, it's like everything you dream of. When you watch the movie Chocolat, and she says, would you like hot chocolate? And you see her pour this like cup full of melted, it was like that. It was like, this is so delicious.
See, and I know that that the whole thing about chocolate having the same reaction women as, like, you know, the sex or whatever, I know that's like an urban legend, but it does. I will say this, though. I don't think it's that's an urban legend. I think the reason for it, that everybody thinks it's like oxytocin or some drug in there, that I don't think is true. But I think the end result really is the same. I mean, whatever the chemical reason for it actually is, I think if you were to take like 100 women off the street and you say, look, you could either have you could either have some sex, or you could have this, and then you just hold up like a steaming cup of that melted chocolate with the caramel and the sea salt. I think probably like 35 of the 100 women would probably go for the chocolate.
Probably.
I mean,
and I've no interest in this. I'm not getting any financial backing from this or anything. But I will say that if you've never been to Ruby Jewel Scoops, their scoop shop on Mississippi, they make amazing ice cream, just amazing ice cream. And then they make they started out by doing I think they had a food cart, and they do ice cream sandwiches, and they make their own cookies and do these like combinations, like for the season they have pumpkin ice cream between like two spiced ginger cookies and that kind of thing.
I could just see you over there, you're like right now just watching you, it's like you're about to dissolve into a puddle of tears, you know. Consisting of pleasure and pain.
And it's one of those places, I'm not a big fan of the waffle cone per se, but they make the waffle cones like fresh, like on demand. Like, I want a waffle cone, and there's a guy standing over there making a waffle cone. And so so the place is just awesome. I have to say, Ruby Jewel, go there, have some ice cream. It was delicious.
It's like you're describing some like particular full body rubdown you got in Bangkok or something. I mean, really, it's just like
it kind of was like that.
Okay,
it really was.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. We should take a break, because we're way over time, and Ryan White is undoubtedly sitting in the kitchen cooling his heels. So we'll come back
steaming with anger.
Start some actual news later on today. We got your top five songs written about a celebrity crush. Also, Darwin Watch, Geek Watch, Clown Watch, and more. Stay there. You were listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Go nowhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Just thinking of deviltry, planet white panics, a hat that's so old. I'd rather write about her in my diary. Could she be
from a demon seed. Don't excite me anymore. Is there one girl, just one girl who says I'm bigger than Jesus now? And I love her, I'm bigger than Jesus now. Up above her, I'm stage diving. Up the church of the holier than thou. Got his uptight white virginal followers. I've got these metal chicks dumber than rocks. Dated one once, but I hated the music. And all her ex-boyfriends were there on the bus. It's never good to be understood by a girl in acid wash. God only knows what it is that I really want. Guess I could ask, but he's not the best confidant. Puts me down in the biblical sense. In this basement apartment with hell to pay rent. But there's one girl, just one girl, who says I'm bigger than Jesus now. And I love her, I'm bigger than Jesus now. Up above her, I'm stage diving. Up the church of the holier than thou. Bigger than Jesus now. I'm bigger than Jesus now.
Listening to the Emerson News Network. the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio program. Thank you for joining us. 503-505-6964. Hey, what area code is 425? Anyone? Anyone? Ryan White from the Oregonian?
No idea.
All right. Should I answer the phone and see who this is?
Of course.
All right. Hello, Rick Emerson Radio program. Good day to you, sir, madam, as the case may be. How can I help you?
Hey, Rick, it's Melissa. How are you?
Melissa, hello. How are you?
Good. I'm in Seattle. 425 is east side of Seattle. So.
What was I thinking? I was thinking it was San Francisco, but I think that's 415, maybe.
Correct.
When did has Seattle always had two area codes? When did they stop? When did it stop being just 206? Or has that always been the case?
I don't know.
I realize this is the line of demarcation where I vault over the line separating things that I care about and things that, you know, that are cared about by everybody. Here's my thing about the area codes, real quick, because I say paying no attention to the fact that everyone's eyes are glazing over. I do not understand why they didn't just start to parcel out the area codes by device. You know, one set of area codes for fax machines, one set of area codes for cell phones, one set of area codes for landlines, you know, one set of area codes for, like, the five guys who still have pagers.
Isn't that how it was supposed to be? I think in Portland, originally, 971 was supposed to have been for cell phones, and then they ran out of 503s, so it became, I think that was how it was supposed to be. I might be wrong.
I think they should have done that because then it's like, because then it obviates the need to actually say the area code in many of the, you know, in many times. You're going to be giving somebody the number and you say it's for a fax machine, then they just already know it is implied, not unlike carbon molecules. You know where you stand in terms of, never mind, it's a thing only I care about. How was your Monday? How can I make your life better on this fine afternoon?
Actually, I wanted to let Dawn know. She was talking about changing her diet. At the end of last year, I went for a physical and got some not so great news from my doctor. And I'm obese, and they told me that I needed to lose some weight. And which I knew, I didn't need the doctor to tell me to lose weight, but to get better, I need to. So I have started a diet. I've been on a diabetic diet, and Dawn, if you're trying to get rid of sugars and eat more healthy, I 500% endorse it. I've lost about 12 pounds since about just after Christmas, and I feel fantastic. So I just thought I'd throw that out to you if you're looking to lose some weight.
About 5-6 years ago, I lost 35 pounds doing sort of a modified Atkins, and I felt incredible, like, the whole time. I felt awesome. It was really the healthiest I think I've felt, you know, in my adult life. So I'm very happy to be.
I feel great. I mean, I work out every day, and, you know, I'm eating, like, three meals a day and two snacks or whatever. But it's been great, and it's been really easy to follow. It hasn't been, like, counting calories. I mean, I do eat smaller portions and all that. But anyway, I just wanted to throw that out to you because I was really paranoid about, you know, when somebody says diet and, you know, that alone can be stressful. So,
well, especially when it's the doctor, like if the doctor says something like, and what we're really going to need to do is we're going to need to watch your caloric intake and we're going to have to get some of these pounds off, because you start thinking, then it just becomes this horrible Hobson's choice of, like, I can either continue to eat the way that I'm eating, but I'm obviously going to die within like a week and a half if I do that,
yeah.
Or I can continue to live some sort of
option A or option B.
Yeah.
And
option B is like some joyless, horrible existence from which all pleasure has been hermetically, removed and just excised. So
I hear you. It was not fun. So, but anyway, it's so far. I mean, I have a long way to go, but so far it's worked really well for me. And so I just thought I'd throw that out to you because I know what it's. I mean, I didn't realize how addicted to sugar I was until I started this process.
Oh yeah, it's easy. Well, we can support each other via Facebook.
Let's all wear decorative bracelets. All right.
I'll send you though. And just one more thing. I love hot cocoa too, and so it was that that is like the one thing I totally miss. And I tried sugar free hot cocoa, and it just doesn't cut it.
That's
so,
how much she
anyway.
Loves it.
There's commiseration from the good people of the Inland Empire. All right.
So anyway, I know you're busy, but I just wanted to say thanks, and also thanks for everything for the past year. It's been so nice to have you back on. the web, whatever, the internet, radio, whatever it is. It's just so nice to have you guys back. I don't listen every day at work, but I try to listen, maybe, you know, catch up on the weekends or whatever, and it's so nice, and it's so worth the 32 cents a day.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. You call us anytime, Melissa.
All right, be good.
All right, there you go. That is that's Melissa. All right. Well, that beats my plan, which is just to cut off one of your legs, so.
That doesn't help me, like, look hotter in clothes, though.
Make it harder to get to the fridge,
though. If I'm just missing a leg.
I suppose. It is really, Heather Mills has got that, and she's got that niche all sewn up.
I mean, granted, I would weigh less.
Yeah.
But it's not really the thing I'm looking for.
Ryan White for the Oregonian. Hello, how are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
You said you were a little...
A slender man with no weight problems.
No, but here's the thing. But you did say, I think, as we were in the break just now, is the bag of Ruffles that you've taken out of the snack box in the corner, is that the first thing you've had all day?
It is.
Awesome.
It, except for, like, four cups of coffee.
Are you on that parent thing where you're drinking, where your meals consist of coffee, beer, and then like graham crackers and apple juice?
My wife months ago signed us up for these like weekly emails from babycenter.com.
Right.
So, you know, like last week, your baby at 7 months, 2 weeks. And there's always this, you know, section like taking care of mom and dad. And last week it said, try to avoid alcohol and caffeine. I was like, oh, go do F yourself.
What is the...
There have been weeks that's all I have.
Yeah, you said I think I was mentioning again during the break that we have another friend of ours who his kid had some sort of minor surgery, and so he was having to like put eye drops in, and it was like literally like every 3 hours for 2 weeks. And it's the thing of like, it's a baby, so you can't screw around with that. Like, there's no like, I missed today, so I'll just put in twice as many tomorrow. Like, there's just... And he said he could not remember the last time that he was sane and well rested.
Yeah, no, I mean, and with things like that, like, as insane as I am with like health things and like being vaguely hypochondriac, now I'm like a hypochondriac for two.
Well, that's because are you the dad?
And I take her much more seriously than I take me.
Are you the dad that every time Stella makes noise or she cries or does anything, like you're sort of trying to, you know, like you're running it through some sort of Romulan decoding device in your head, like trying to figure out what it means?
And oh. Yeah, I mean, she had, like, you know, just some chest congestion the other day, and I was convinced she had pneumonia. I called the helpline at like, Kaiser, and I'm on the phone with the help nurse, and she's like, well, we could continue talking through this, or you could bring her in. And I said, well, talking through this isn't going to talk me down.
Right.
So...
Because you're convinced that everything means, like, I have eaten a fistful of buttons, or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and with me, I'm the guy that goes to WebMD and decides, like, no matter what I have cancer. So, sprained ankle, cancer.
Who needs a doctor when I've got broadband? This is like the greatest, saddest moment. I wish that I'd been running. We ought to have some sort of a camera that is sort of like, you know, off, you know, stashed in one of the corners of the studio just to catch moments like this, where you walked in and I think you said like a cursory hello to Dawn, but then you just immediately, like a homing pigeon, right for the box of snacks.
It's ridiculous that all the way on the drive over here, I was thinking, boy, I hope they still have snacks left in that box from last week.
Some Funyuns left at the studio. I will tell you this: if you ever, I mean, now since we've sort of stumbled into, I think inadvertently, into a theme for today, which is eating and food and dieting and whatever. And I forget why. I think it's because you said that you're trying to, I don't know, you're cutting down. Are you cutting down, not to just dwell so much on your diet thing, but is it carbs specifically, or is it just in general you're trying to eat better?
It's both. It's carbs particularly. It's basically cutting out as much processed food as I possibly can. And that automatically cuts down on carbs. When you cut out processed sugar and processed flour, that's like half the battle right there.
Was there a triggering incident? Was this a, because I have those, where it's like you're standing in that three-panel mirror or whatever.
I think it was that damn salted caramel hot chocolate at Ruby Joe. Because the thing is, here's the thing. I've been eating crap. You saw me on Friday. I forgot to bring my lunch, and I had a bag of chili cheese Fritos, a bag of Famous Amos chocolate chip cookies, and a Twix bar. That was my lunch.
Are you kidding
Friday.
Me? There were Famous Amos chocolate chip cookies in there?
Not anymore. Yes.
Oh.
You really need to dig through the box more.
You are my sworn enemy.
And, well, you had the Three Musketeers truffle bar. But that was my lunch. And then I went home on, I can't remember what I had for dinner on Friday, but I think we had pasta or something ridiculous and carby. Then Saturday, didn't eat anything like almost all day. Then on our way to the Geek in the City thing, because we were like hungry, but we didn't feel like eating, we stopped and got a milkshake.
Of course.
At Carl's Jr. And then went to the Geek in the City thing, then went to the ice cream place because it was right next door. And Patrick got ice cream, and I had the hot chocolate, which was the most insane rich. It had caramel in it. And that was the thing where I was having such a sugar rush, and I was bouncing off the walls, and I realized that all of I had been eating nothing but crap, and it started somewhere around Christmas. And it's like, no wonder I just felt sluggish and gross and like sort of achy all over all of the time. And I just thought, I have to stop this. I've got to stop this. Strangely enough, I haven't gained any weight back. I had lost about 12 pounds before Christmas, haven't gained any of it back. I just feel like utter crap all of the time.
Are you just burning off the calories with like self-flagellation?
I think so. Just loathing. Just sheer self-loathing is like burning off the calories. So I just realized I can't continue like this. This is going to kill me. This is bad and wrong. So I just said I got to go back to, you know, just eating like a person who doesn't live in a world surrounded by chips and brownies.
Or just go get a room at the Chelsea, I would imagine. It's really one more. Really, I mean, there's only two paths available. Well, if you, I mean, here, I will give you this. This will be like a verbal St. Christopher medal that you can clutch to your bosom in moments of weakness, so you can you know that you are not alone here. So I swear to God, I wasn't going to admit this, but I swear to God, if you were to look in the trunk of my car right now, there's a pizza. I swear to you, and I wasn't going to say that out loud. That was the thing I was not going to reveal. Because the thing is, my wife was gone this weekend.
If you keep it under the hood, it'll stay warm.
Well, and it's like, and you, when you asked, when I said earlier, I said that I made the mistake of eating something between shows, and so I had a little bit of the dry mouth going. You said, "What did you eat?" And I said, "It's not important." You know, the point is, it was something.
You didn't want to say trunk pizza.
I didn't want to say that it was pizza out of the trunk of my car. Because that's really what it was. And so for anybody who thinks that, like, you know, that I've developed a sense of shame as I've gotten older, or that I've any sort of, like, that I've become more couth, or that I'm just less of a knuckle-dragging primate, clearly that is not the case. Because, so my wife was out of town this weekend, and she left, I think, she was in Eugene with her godless hippie friends from, like, Thursday. And she's actually back she's doing that thing, though, and I think this happens more for guys than for women. It's the deal where she's arriving back in town sometime today, and I just don't know when. But you always have to err on the side of caution. And so you do that thing of just going through the house, just like, you know, some late night automated scrubbing, machine that goes down the aisles of the Winco and, you know, polishes everything. So I'm just going through the house room by room, just making sure that everything is, you know, because I don't want her to know what filth, you know, what a hovel the house becomes in her absence. I mean, I basically just turn into Brian Wilson if she's out of town, you know, for more than 10 minutes. And I'm just sitting there in the living room, and it's just the dogs and I just, you know, just sort of in our own filth and sadness, so I'm going through the house room by room. But the thing I'd done last night is I had ordered a pizza in just a moment of weakness, and the worst thing happened. I didn't get a chance to talk about this at the beginning of the show. I forget why, but the worst thing happened. So I order a pizza, and I had it all planned out where I was going to pay cash for it, because then there's no trail, right? then it can never be discovered. And so I order a pizza, and the guy's like, "Okay, what's your address?" And I tell him my address, and he's like, "Is that cash or, you know, cash charge?" I'm like, "That'll be cash, sir." And I already know how much it is, and it's like, I've got that in my wallet. I'm all good. And so it's like 25 minutes later, you know, the door rings, and it's like, "Oh, the pizza's here. Fantastic." And so there's this, and of course, you know, and it's like the one time out of like 1,000. It's not this like schlumpy bald guy that is always the guy who brings me the pizza. No, it's like this hot like 19-year-old girl. She's on the front porch with the pizza, and I said, "What?" You know, and I'm immediately like sucking in my gut and trying not to look like I've just sat around just covered in grease, and you know, and
she delivers pizzas for a living, so it's not like it's going to surprise her that you've ordered a pizza.
Oh, I thought you were saying that, like, I should not care about impressing her because she was a pizza chick. Because that's not how the male mind works.
And also, just
guys don't care.
Think about the
male
man.
The male mind thinks about that movie they saw that one time where the hot chick showed up delivering the pizza.
Exactly. Brandy Taylor, why, I did order a sausage, and so did you. So she's on the porch, and she's like, "Okay, that'll be $17.25 or whatever." And I reach into my pocket, and I pull out, you know, the little money clip, and I pull it out, and I just – and I don't ever do this, but I just had totally miscalculated. And I spent at some point, I guess over the last few days, I guess I just spent whatever was in my pocket. And I have no recollection of doing that, by the way, and I have no idea what I spent it on. So that's a good sign. But I had like $2. And I just said like, "Ugh. Okay, here's the thing. And it's just, you know, you just feel like such a tool. It's not as bad as when your credit card is declined or something." But I said, "Okay, this doesn't really ever happen, but I don't have the right amount of cash. So I'm going to have to call in, you know, and put this on the credit card." And she's, you know, and she kind of grits her teeth, just like, "Okay, fine, whatever," you know, because it's raining and it's horrible outside. So then I have that whole choice of, do I invite her in, you know, which A, always seems like it's creepy in my head. Like, it sounds creepy if I say, like, do you want to come in? Because, but I'm going to be on the phone for a couple minutes. I got to call in and give them my credit card information.
I just happen to not have enough money. Would you like to come in and wait while I call?
Would you like to stay in my basement pit while I talk to your boss? But on the other hand, it's like, it's windy. I mean, you know, this weekend, it was windy and rainy and horrible. Also, I think my porch light is burned out. So it's like, I mean, it's like I live in a spook house, basically. I live in the old Jensen place that burned down a few years ago. But I don't want to leave her standing outside in the dark. Like, that would just be a dick move. Like, stay out here, woman. And I'd shut the door. So I just said, like, it's going to take a couple of minutes. You know, if you want to wait inside, that's great. You know, or not. It's like, you know, whatever. It's up to you. And she actually did the thing of, like, doing the slow turn of the head and, like, inspecting the house, like, taking it all in. And then she, like, looked out at the street, like, will anybody hear my screams? You know, and she says, well, fine. And so she walked inside. But, of course, the house is just a freaking disaster area because I haven't gotten to the cleaning it room by room thing. So there's just, like, it's like a wasteland of just, like, boxer shorts and, like, food wrappers, like, everywhere. Also, I got rid of the Christmas tree, finally, which is cunningly hidden in the driveway, you know, where you can see it, like, from everywhere. But, of course, there's just pine needles, all over the living room, just everywhere. So it's like I'm just living in the outdoors, basically. It just happens to have a roof. And so she's standing there, and I'm just thinking, like, she's absolutely not going to have relations with me now. That ship has sailed. So I call in, and I talk to the pizza guy. And the pizza guy, who just hates me, you know, because it's like they have to go back and cancel out the thing, and I have to do whatever. And so then I like tip her, like, an absurdly large amount because I just feel like I've just, you know, put everybody out for the night. Anyway, so she leaves the pizza. She finally, we get that taken care of. She leaves. And so then I have, like, however much. But, of course, here's what a lazy dick I am. That when I called to order the pizza, the guy's like, okay, because I ordered a medium. And the guy's like, okay, that'll be $13.25 or whatever. And I go, okay, if you want to deliver that, I'll be – just have ring the doorbell. And he's like, ooh, so sorry, sir. The minimum amount we need for a delivery is $16. And it was like, then you have that moment of indecision that you know is really not a moment of indecision at all because you know what you're going to say. It's like I could either get in the car and I could go pick it up, or I could just do what I did, which is to go – well, let's just upgrade that to a large, shall we? Which is not because, like, I wanted a large, just because I want to leave the house at all. So they deliver a large. So I've just got more pizza than I could possibly eat. So then I clean the house. And then this morning, as I'm getting ready to leave to come here, I think to myself, all right, now she said she was going to be home around 4. I get done around 4. I wonder what the odds are that I will beat her home. Because the thing is, I can't have her because we're on this whole obviously fictitious on my part, the good eating jag, not unlike you and Patrick are trying to sort of eat more healthily. That's me too. And I promise to be the supportive, you know, I promise not to undermine. That's my thing is I'm not going to sort of sabotage by just having a bunch of stuff in the house. So I'm like, if I leave a pizza here, A, it indicates that I had a pizza without her around. So I'm a pizza cheat. B, it's going to look like I don't care because I have deliberately left something around the house that is an invitation to cheat on the diet for her. C, it's almost going to look like a dick move, like I am deliberately taunting her with, like, look at this pizza that I had half of. So I had only the best of intentions this morning when I left the house with my bag, my headphones, my whatever, and then a huge pizza under my arm, which if you've been looking out from the end of the houses across the street, you would have just seen me put in the trunk of my car. Like, what would you think? Like, what kind of savage lives across the street that he's putting a pizza in the trunk of his car? And then when I got here, I stopped on the way from the car to here this morning to get some pizza out of the trunk to bring in with me. Trunk pizza. I better take that with me so I can power up for the show. So that's what I did this weekend / this morning / you know, like an hour ago. I'm a waste of skin is what I don't deserve to live. Hello, everyone. All right. Don't we all feel better about ourselves now?
So you're like Homer that time Marge left him for like 5 hours.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's like, what is that episode of Mad Men where it's like Trudy Campbell goes out of town or something and I don't know. Pete ends up doing something completely. Like, he ends up, like, humping the chick who lives across the hall or something.
He tries to.
Doesn't he?
That's the thing is he gets all skeezy with her and talking her up and chatting her up. And then he kind of attempts it. He goes over with that. And she turns him away.
She's a little on the young side, too, if I remember correctly. Yeah. But there's that whole thing where Trudy Campbell gets home and Pete, realizing, I think, what he becomes when his wife is on, he goes, baby, I'd like it if you didn't leave town without me anymore or something, you know, because he knows what becomes of him. So that's kind of me in a sort of caloric sense. So, you're right, though. That is like it. But I mean, you're probably not the same. You're the exception to all of these things. And I get the feeling the baby notwithstanding, that your house is, you know, you probably don't just dissolve into chaos.
No. When we were before the. I don't think either of us have left since the baby was born. But beforehand, I reverted back to my 25-year-old self that is capable of making any meal without, in a way that uses no dishes,
right.
No silverware,
exactly.
No nothing. Tinfoil goes on whatever, frozen pizza or mini corn dogs go in the oven, and
they
then you eat them directly off of the tinfoil and then ball it up and throw it away. Dishes, no muss, nothing.
Don't you think they should just make edible plates, like for bachelors at this point, where it's a plate that's just made out of tortilla or something, and you can just, at the end, you just like, that becomes the thing. You know what I mean? If they could make an edible plate that was microwave safe, that is like money in the bank.
Well, I think they make those little tortilla bowls for tostadas. You could buy a box of those and just eat all your food out of those.
How great would that be? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I actually do have a friend who he was traveling a ton. I think he was covering the New Jersey Devils at the time for one of the papers in New York, who one day just came home and took a look in his sink and threw every dish away and went out and bought new dishes.
I have totally done that. That's the thing of it's too hard. In my own defense, Sarah does that, I think, once a year still, where she will just she'll come home and I've talked about this before. You go to Sarah's apartment and it's and she's a very, just stylish, fashionable girl and whatnot. And so you think you have an idea of what her place looks like. And her place, I haven't seen her new apartment, but her apartment really is. Her last place, anyway, was really beautiful and really well put together and, sort of quirky and great and, everything was just so. But then you go into the kitchen and it's just it's like a super fun sight in there. I mean, and I didn't feel so bad when I walked into Sarah's apartment, I don't know, a couple years ago, and there was the horde of flies just circling everything in the sink. And I thought, I am not alone in this. So
we were, Patrick and I were having a sort of an argument back and forth about who had to deal with this just this weekend, where I was cleaning out the fridge and I actually tried to clean out the fridge every couple of weeks, just do the whole, what shouldn't be here? What's dying? What needs to be just gotten rid of because it's gross? And then everything is sort of reorganized so it's nice and neat. And there was this casserole dish with a plastic cover. It's a really nice oval Pyrex.
Was it in the fridge?
It was in the fridge. A nice oval Pyrex casserole dish that has its own plastic lid that it comes with that has a little vent in case there's something warm. I love this dish. I really do. And it was in the back of the fridge and I thought, I wonder what's in there, because I haven't used this in a while. And remember the spoon bread that I forgot to bring here on Thanksgiving?
Yes.
That was it.
Oh, wow.
It's been there since Thanksgiving.
But it's been sealed,
sort
of. I mean, it's probably not as – it's probably fresh-ish, sort of.
Sealed things can do bad things.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
So we took it out of the fridge. This was actually what happened was, it was last weekend, and we took it out of the fridge, and Patrick said, I will get rid of that. And I said, you're awesome. And then he didn't.
Of course.
So it just sat at room temperature in the kitchen for a week. So
swelling.
So this weekend I noticed it was still there and I was like, one of us is going to have to open that and dump that. And Patrick's going, I don't know. And for a moment I just thought, we could just throw it away. It's actually an expensive piece of, cookware.
But that's how afraid you are.
But yeah, just don't want to deal with it so much. We could just throw it away.
Because you know that there's some horrible germ in there that only thrives in anaerobic environments, and it's just inside, just sort of, waiting to come out.
It's like whatever is in that plastic thing in that Christmas bag over there.
Oh, I'm not going to open that ever.
There's a bag over there that I believe belongs to Greg or Sarah. And
that's what we're saying anyway.
And on Friday, I said, I wonder what's in there. Is it a Christmas present for someone? What could it be? And I went in there and there's a bottle of rum that hasn't been opened. So I thought, it can't be Sarah because she would have drank it by it. And there's a coffee cup. And then underneath of it is a plastic container with some kind of food in it that is beige and sloshy and has been sitting there since before Christmas.
Yeah, let's never open that. I will. Then we should after this, we should do some news. You've got actually an update on the Rex Ryan. The New York Jets, the foot fetish thing, is that not
there? There are.
Okay, so we'll get that. I will say that I mentioned, I think, last week that when I lived, I think on Friday we were talking about this, when I lived by myself in Salt Lake, I went through this 6-month period where all I would eat was Red Baron pizzas, and I would eat two at a sitting. But in my kitchen, I just described it as being this sort of endless Jenga games happening at once, multiples, with dozens of these teetering stacks. Leaning towers of pizza, if you will, just these Red Robin, these are Red Baron boxes. But there was also the saddest evidence of this one day when I decided I was going to eat healthily, and it was because I bought a potato, and And I ended up not eating the potato, and it had fallen into the sink at one point. And I swear to God, first of all, that it, like, as I lived there, it got closer and closer to the sink because I never bothered to actually throw it away. And I think that it was closer to the drain when I moved out than when I first, you know, when it first fell into the sink. But if you had had like some sort of a, you know, what are they, like time-lapse photography, you would have seen that this potato I purchased like at one point to eat, and then I just didn't. By the time I moved out, it was that thing where it's like the potato had grown like the weird like tendrils, like the weird like vines or something. And I think it was actually like wrapping its way up like to one of the cupboards or something. Like that was here's what a filthy hovel this place was. When I first moved to Salt Lake, I moved there with this girl, and I've told this story that it was clearly one of those things that I should have known in retrospect. Like we were not long for this world as a couple. But I moved to Salt Lake with a girl. We were there for about 3 months. And I did the whole, like, you know, Joe, I'm feeling a little smothered. I think I need some space or whatever. And I was just a total dick about it. But she moved out. But the day that she moved out, she had actually been drinking, like, this sort of Lipton bottled iced tea or whatever. And she, like, one of the last things she did, I think, is we were, like, loading up the Ryder truck or something. She had this Lipton bottle, and she set it down by the telephone. And I swear to God, that bottle was still there when I moved out, like, a year and a half later. It had not moved. It was still there. So, and I like to say that it was some sort of a symbolic museum piece, so I could always remember the love that we should know. And I was just I just never – I was that guy. I mean, I was just it's amazing I didn't get scurvy. It was just a terrible place. We should do a little bit of news with Don Taylor at the news desk.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
We have a Darwin Watch.
Awesome. Here is your Darwin Watch for Monday, January 17th, 2011, right here at the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
I have a feeling some bad stuff is about to go down.
Don't. I ate all my caps.
Don't.
My parents won't let me use scissors.
Don't.
Another one bites the dust.
Don't.
Another one bites the dust. And another one gone. And another one gone. Another one bites the dust.
Oh, my heart just stopped. Ah, there it goes.
Here's Don Taylor with your Darwin Watch.
A Staten Island man who was celebrating the New York Jets' victory over the New England Patriots took a fatal sled ride down his driveway and into the path of an oncoming vehicle on Sunday night. Police say football fan Raymond Larson, 46, was sledding down his unplowed driveway.
Oh, that's awesome.
Just before 9 p.m. to celebrate the Jets' win. His steep driveway faces the road, and when Larson slid to the bottom, he fatally crashed into an oncoming blue 2006 Hyundai Santa Fe traveling westbound.
Oh, wait. Oh, I think I just pulled something with that. Ow. Police, were the people in the car killed?
I don't believe so.
Okay,
no.
Good. Okay, now, no, now I can laugh freely.
Just him.
Oh, and it faces, and the driveway faces the road. It wasn't like he went over an embankment or through a fence or something.
No.
It actually faces the road.
Larson had been drinking Sunday night.
Awesome.
And had just arrived home from watching the Jets game at a nearby restaurant with his girlfriend.
Oh, wow.
The fatal collision occurred about an hour after the game ended. Reports say he was wearing a Mark Sanchez jersey and two green disc-shaped sleds were found at the scene.
Oh.
Larson.
You think he had eye black on?
Oh, God. That's fantastic.
Larson suffered severe head and face trauma and was unconscious and unresponsive when officers found him. He was transported to the hospital where he was pronounced dead. The driver was a 61-year-old woman who stayed at the scene. She did not have alcohol in her system and is not suspected of any criminal activity.
I wonder if you could look at a pie chart of deaths or just property damage in this country and just see how many of them immediately follow or are related to the climactic, you know, sporting events. Some sort of a championship.
High.
Yeah. And then
it's high.
Yeah. And then something immediately, you know, like a third of the city is on fire. Or you've got this guy drunk. Now, let's back up for a second. Does he explain? Because I think I may have just, in the just sort of cavalcade of lunacy that started this story, I think I may have missed part of this. Please do explain. He was celebrating?
Yeah, apparently he was.
Is this a tradition, Ryan White? People, you know, the Jets win something, you have to sled down a driveway? Is this, did I miss this? Is it like Rumspringa or something?
No.
Like?
Happy sports fans do strange things.
Where did he make the leap in his head to like, the Jets won something, I will celebrate this by sliding on a plastic disc down my driveway into the road?
Well, I think he began by the celebration by continuing the drinking that he'd been doing for the previous 4 hours during the game.
I'm so happy. I'm going to sled down my driveway.
This absolutely calls for a dangerous sledding, as nothing ever has. Oh, wow. That's so great. And then there were two sleds found there. So I wonder if he was like doing some like tricky sort of navigate, like 1 foot per sled, like standing or whatnot.
Quite possibly.
Oh, man. This is why we got to get those like CCTV cameras. What do they have in Britain that just film everything everywhere? so we can see this when it happens, you know? I mean, because really, what is the, I mean, this is the sort of thing that this is what you want as an object lesson for kids when you're visiting high schools and trying to get them not to chew tobacco or drink. Be like, don't be like this guy. And then you just cut to, you know,
woohoo, jets.
Sort of an I regret nothing except the end part there that he regrets. Oh, wow. All right. Awesome. There's your Darwin watch. See, sometimes that Darwin watch, sometimes they deliver, sometimes they don't. This one delivered in spades. Well done. There's your...
Another one bites the dust.
Awesome.
Another one bites the dust. And another one gone. And another one gone. Another one bites the dust. Hey.
That's fantabulous. Hey, while we're talking about the Jets, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Being the New York media market, somebody's going to ask Mark Sanchez about that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the other thing is like, how would you like it your jersey is found on like one of the dumbest guys who shows up in the news that month? You know what I mean?
Like one of those guys who like climbs up a radio tower and like, you know, microwaves himself to death was wearing a Rick Emerson Show t-shirt.
Yes. By the way, can I just tell you that I won't say waited because that makes it sound like I'm looking forward to it. But I just like I know at some point, like that's one of those bingo squares in my head that has yet to be checked off, but it will. Like they will arrest at some point. They will arrest some guy for something horrible, and they're going to drag him out of the shirt, and he's going to be wearing like a Rick Pig Baby, you know, sweatshirt or something, and it's going to be like, you know, wearing a t-shirt belonging to a local DJ, you know, and it's like, and he'll have done something. He'll have cut up a bunch of cheerleaders and baked him in a pie.
And
or
he'll
something.
Just look into the camera and yell, "Best show ever!" As they're dragging him away.
Well, I think like Stern had to make peace with that like so long ago. The idea that every time some guy would call up and just pull some jackass prank on CNN or would like, you know, call into the Montel Williams show and just say something retarded and then immediately he would be, you know, Howard Stern rules, you know, and it was like, you know, I guess you got to be zen with it at a certain point. So that is a thing that has not yet happened, but we are you know, we are eagerly anticipating that moment so that we can just be done with it. So let's talk about the Jets, actually, and let's talk about it's Rex Ryan is the coach,
yes.
Right? So just for those who came in late, as they used to say in the Phantom comic strip, so Rex Ryan, there was this whole business that came out where his wife, and I don't think anybody's confirmed this, but I think really, let's be honest, I think it's at the point where we don't really need confirmation. I think we all just know that this is true because we've all seen it.
The lack of denial was as much the gruff, it's a personal...
Right.
It's a personal thing.
It's a personal matter. It's that his wife was apparently a woman of some note, some renown on foot fetish websites.
And we've seen the pictures. It's like, here's what she looks like. This is her with her husband. This is her being her. Here's the woman in the foot fetish videos. And you go, oh, yeah, that's her.
Yeah, and it's...
No doubt, that's her.
And it's not like I care one way or the other anyway. It doesn't matter to me. But I think what also made it a little bit better to me was that he was... From the auditory evidence was such, it indicated he sounded very much like the director in a lot of the videos, where he's, you know, he's instructing some large Nubian man to move from one ankle to a toe or
which
something.
Which isn't much different from teaching somebody to tackle, ultimately.
Yeah.
It's a lot like his day job. When
really?
You...
Yeah, no, it's like he's got like, what if he's got the sort of CBS chalkboard thing, and he's going, what you're going to do is you're going to start up at the ankle here, and then you're going to cut down through this area, and you're going to go to this little piggy right here, straight up the middle into your mouth. And that's what you got to do. And then it's a sponsored by Nestle or something and whatever. Did you say that there's more more has come out though?
So they played the Patriots yesterday, and these are two teams that do not like each other. They're in the same division. And so early in the week, a Jets player calls Patriots quarterback Tom Brady an a-hole. And then backs it up by saying, no, I meant it. He's an a-hole. The Patriots, not being the kind of team to trash talk, don't say anything until their receiver, Wes Welker, does his sits down with the press at some point last week. And in the span of a 9-minute interview, made 11 foot references, like referring to New York cornerbacks as having really great feet and answering one question by saying, you know, you want to dip your toe in real carefully here.
Oh, that's awesome.
And he just kept coming back to it. So he ended up getting suspended for the first offensive series by their coach yesterday.
Oh, God.
For this.
That's fantastic.
Which would have been the greatest thing all week until yesterday's sports cover of the New York Post, which showed a... Which had a woman's feet with her toes painted to say "Go Jets" in the headline "Lick 'em."
Oh, awesome! Wait. Oh, there we go. That's golden. Oh, wow. That really is.
God bless the New York Post.
Oh, God, you know, seriously, do you realize that Alexander Hamilton founded the New York Post? One of the fathers of our country created what is without a doubt the most repellent newspaper in the Western world.
I have a friend who worked for them for a while. I asked him one time what it was like, and he goes, "You know how you like file a story and you think to yourself, you know, you're on deadline and you think, boy, I hope they don't change too much before it appears in the paper tomorrow." I go, "Yeah." He goes, "I file it and I think to myself, boy, I hope they don't put something libelous in there."
They are the New York Post is the oldest continuously published newspaper in the United States. I mean, it is older than the New York Times. It's older than the Boston Globe. It is the oldest newspaper in America. And I'm looking at the front right here, and yeah, there's just a huge woman's right foot, and the nails are up in it. It says "Go Jets," and it says "Lick 'em." Next stop to glory. Gangrene set to stomp arch rival. Pats. So that's wonderful. That's fantastic. And here we go. Thursday, Patriots wide receiver Wes Welker used 11 foot references in news conferences, and that drew an angry reaction from linebacker Bart. Let's see here. I'm looking here. So this is Wes Welker. He's a wide receiver for the Patriots, you said?
Yep.
Okay, here's what he said. I have to find audio of this for tomorrow. On Tom Brady's experience, he said, "Having Tom Brady there, it goes without saying, he's a guy who really is making sure everybody is putting their best foot forward. It's a playoff atmosphere. You just can't stick your toe in the water." Talking about he tore an ACL. He said, "I have my foot up in the air trying to get the swelling to go down. But if you want to go out there, you really got to put your best foot forward." And he talks about the cornerback, says he's got great feet. He says, "We've really had some younger players step up this year." Another great feet reference, putting your best foot forward, being good little foot soldiers.
That was actually my favorite, the good little foot soldiers.
And then talking about combating the Jets' blitz packages, he says they move people around and do a lot of blitzes, a lot of teams you don't see all year, so you really have to be on your toes and make sure you're ready to go. Oh, I love this country. I love this country. And all of the things that most people find horrible or repellent about the media, I just embrace them. I embrace them and I hold them tightly to my bosom. And they warm me on cold nights, Don. God damn. All right. This really is the best show ever. I try not to say that because it sounds self-aggrandizing. But, I mean, come on. Ryan White from the Oregonian, what else is, apart from all of this merriment, what else is going on in your world?
Three really good records coming out tomorrow that we've talked about here.
The Social Distortion,
the DeLorean record finally comes out for reals, and the Decemberists record tomorrow. And we had a... If anybody's interested in that, I had a big story in yesterday's O section on the Decemberists.
And did you say that this is the record that this is one that is either it's another elaborate concept record or this one is sort of stripped down?
It's 40 minutes long. It's, you know, there's actually some songs that are very personal songs that Colin Molloy has not done a lot of writing of. And the one thing that the one newsy bit in the feature on the record and stuff yesterday is that they're going to go on. He doesn't want to use the word hiatus, but it sounds like hiatus for a while after this record. This is 10 years, and he's got a three book deal that he's for books that he young adult books that he's writing, and his wife Carson Ellis is illustrating, and so they're just going to kind of walk away for a while. So
and he's another one of those guys that just obviously has so much. He just has so much creativity just crammed into his head that, I mean, it's like that if he wasn't so good at everything, you would sort of like you just hate him a little bit. You know what I mean? Like it's he obviously just has, you know.
It was interesting because I hadn't met him yet. And I went up to their house and he's got this nice work studio there next to it. And we sat there and talked for a while. And he's a really interesting guy. And, you know, the way that I've described the record to a few people is it's the Decemberists record for people who have wanted to like the Decemberists but have always kind of had something like all of the Victorian England thing getting in the way, or the giant. I loved the last record. I loved Hazards of Love in part because it was so audacious, and nobody on a major label in 2009 when they put that out should be doing a record like that.
Okay, so I'm really glad you said that actually, because it's. And I don't know whether this is a thing that I have heard like in the zeitgeist, and so that's why I was going to say it, or if it's just a weird coincidence just now. But I was going to say Victorian in terms of like the they have this ornate sort of like really Baroque production style
yeah.
that. again, I always feel like the Decemberists are a band I should really like. And Sarah took me to an in-store, Colin Malloy did a thing at Jackpot Records a couple years back. Mm-hmm. And it was the first time I think he'd played the song Valerie Plame. I don't think it had come out yet. And I remember thinking to myself, like, this is a great song. Like, it was exactly the way that I like my pop to be written. It was just really, really wonderful. And I thought, oh, man, I got to give these guys another chance. I really got to I gotta listen to more of their stuff. And then it's like I heard whatever the next record was when it came out. And I just – again, it just felt like it was – and I realized this is my failing and not theirs, that I'm just not – I'm not quite bright enough, I think, to appreciate certain kinds of – it's like with Elvis Costello. I think I'm not quite smart enough to appreciate certain kinds of pop because it was so elaborately produced that I felt that it just – I found it off-putting.
There have been – you know, I've said before, I was telling somebody yesterday, you know, I've always liked, but somebody who doesn't like, I completely understand where they come from
right.
on that. And I mean, you know, Hazards of Love, which was, you know, in some ways, you know, I mean, it was this huge hour-long record just drenched in British folklore, and then, you know, had this prog rock angle and these Sabbath riffs, and then eventually, like, leading into, you know, some more acoustic, almost country-ish stuff right at the very end, which is kind of where this record picks up in a lot of ways. But, I mean, it was a beast. It was, I mean, that last record was, you know, I wrote in the story that, it, you know, you had two questions when you listened to it for the first time. The second one was, where do you go from here?
Right.
And the first one was, huh?
Right, right.
You know, I mean, the first time I listened to Hazards of Love, I, like, you know, I had to keep pausing it and going to Google and dictionary.com. And, I mean, I needed, like, 17 reference books to get through it. And this new one is none of that, mostly by design on their part. And they even did some things like they recorded out at Pendarvis Farms. They set up in a barn and turned it into a studio, which kind of took away some of the technology and the studio tricks that might take them down a rabbit hole that would
does
eventually
it feel
lead to
contrived. Like, does
nope.
it feel like they're trying too hard to make
nope.
something simple?
No, it feels very, very, very natural. In part because they bring in, you know, Gillian Welch is all over it, singing harmonies with Colin Molloy. But they're just really good kind of pop rock songs.
And what is it called?
The King is Dead.
The King is Dead. All right.
So, and it's actually probably through the end of the day, since it comes out tomorrow, it's still streaming at npr.org. /music. They've been doing the what NPR Music does now, which is, you know, stream the really cool records before
awesome.
They're out. They've also got the new Wanda Jackson record that Jack White produced, which is up and going today.
He's another one of those guys where it's like, you know, he's like Dr. Octopus or something, and he's got one arm that is always just producing things. You know, hey, Loretta Lynn, you know, let me give you the best record you've had in 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And I haven't had a chance to listen to the Wanda Jackson record yet, but I assume it's great.
And the Social Distortion record is it's kind of, I want to say more of the same. I don't mean that in a bad way, but I mean, is it classic kind of their... They do a couple of things, and they do them really well.
Yeah,
they don't really stretch out beyond their...
Maybe a little bluesier than some of the other stuff.
Which I like, and I like it when he does his sort of country stuff. Like his, like, Nessa Sola records have been really, really good.
Yep.
Awesome. So. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We're just... So we're not actually late yet, but we're really...
We will be.
We are trending toward being late, so I should take this moment to talk about Squier's Electric. This is the song, right?
It is.
Okay, what is the name of this song?
Well, let me read the email I got.
Just a little backstory. So our library beds here, all this guy, Lenny D, who is this this pianist and organist who I think died just a couple of years ago, but his heyday was really in the 60s where he just put out endless vinyl records, which, and I own most of them, that are all just this. Some originals, some standards, like Little Brown Jug or whatever, but it's all kind of this. And so I have this whole huge collection of Lenny D music, and this song in particular, every time it would sort of come by in the rotation, Dawn would be like, that song, what is that? And by that time, the song was already done, and I could never figure out which one it was. So now I finally located the song, but of course I have labeled it for some reason only Live Read Bed Number 6, and there's no... And I, rather than
Are you
just,
sure that wasn't the name?
It's possible. You know, the old Benny
Mambo
Goodman
Number
classic.
5.
I had no, like, rather than, you know, as opposed to just sitting and listening through all of the records one by one by one, I just chose to let you dwell in ignorance. So,
yes.
All right.
Well, I received an email from a listener, Dave, in Milwaukee, titled, "Arg, Rick is a dick or a retard." Dawn, I was listening to a podcast from last week. Rick claimed he didn't know the name of that Lenny D tune that got you all hot and bothered. WTF? The tune is Java, made famous by trumpet player Al Hurt. It reached number 4 on Billboard's Hot 100 chart in 1964. You can hear a sample here. I don't see how Rick couldn't name that tune. Otherwise, great show. Listener right. Dave.
Is that Al Hurt, H-I-R-T?
Yes.
Okay, so I have heard of him, and I don't know that I've heard of that song, but I see, it's not, and it's not like I deliberately mislabeled it so that I couldn't tell you.
Me, I've heard the song, like, a number of times over the years, but it's just like, it was driving me crazy. Because, yeah, it's in that same sort of mental place as, like, Baby Elephant Walk and stuff like that. But I'm like going, but that's not what it is. I don't know what it is. And
okay, now, did I not spend a huge, like, 12 or 13 minutes one day going through all of the Lenny D stuff?
You did.
Trying to figure out exactly what song you were referring to.
And apparently you never got to this one.
I'm just saying, it's not like Rick Emerson doesn't care. He cares. He cares a truckload, Don. All right.
Well, thank you.
Well, in any event, we should say that the Rick Emerson Show brought to you today by, among other folks, Squires Electric. Find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com. It is squireselectric.com. That is their website. And if you want to call them, you can do that as well. They can be reached via your telephone at 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. So in addition to listener Dave emailing in to list my many faults, failings, and shortcomings, we also hear from listeners who are doing things like remodeling their homes or they're getting ready to move into a different home. We've heard from one guy who actually is having a home build it, sort of being constructed off in the, you know, off in the great beyond somewhere.
People still do that?
I think they do. I don't have the email in front of me, but he's actually an architect. And it's that whole thing of where it's like he's been building houses for other people his whole life, and now he is actually building a house for his family, which is sort of great. I mean, that's not a thing. I mean, that's a thing that is, you know, it seems so impossibly Hallmarkian in its perfection that, I mean, you know, I just immediately like the guy. I don't think I've met him, but it's fantastic. So, and we heard from a listener who started his own business. He bought a building or he got a space up on Belmont that had been something else, turning it into a gym, had to get it rewired, and he didn't want to get all the way to the point of opening, and then the city comes out and they inspect it, and they give you the thumbs down, and then you get to start from scratch, and then you're out a whole bunch of money, and, you know, and then eventually it just ends up with you, you know, and Randy Leonard, and, you know, in a basement, and one of you is tied to a chair, and it's just a whole lot of bad. So I'm just, you know, not that you should resolve your problems that way, but I'm just saying, you know. So you contact Squires Electric at 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609, or squireselectric.com. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and inspectors, and they can make sure that your business, your home, that it's wired correctly, and that it is ready to go the first time out. 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609, or squireselectric.com. This is normally where we would take a break, but I say we just power through, unless anybody really needs to leave the studio for anything. Urination.
I'm good.
Everyone fine?
I'm fine.
Awesome.
All right.
Don Taylor, where should we go next?
Let's do this Golden Globes coverage real quick.
All right, let me...
And by real quick, I mean, you know, it'll probably take up way too much time.
Okay.
Well, the Golden Globes were last night, and as mentioned previously... because it was the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, and many Hollywood writers have no sense of humor about themselves. Unsurprisingly, the show business press has been giving Ricky Gervais a really hard time for his biting comments last night. Nikki Fink wrote that it was the meanest Golden Globes. The Atlantic called his opening monologue mean-spirited. Alessandra Stanley of the New York Times said that his jokes might have gone too far, but it's so made for compelling television, at least for those who are not in the industry laughing at
it. Yeah, I was going to say, for the 40 people in the room, that might be an issue. But also, it's not like he's making fun of blind kids in an orphanage. I mean, you know, no. He's making fun of Matt Damon. Who cares?
As example of the sort of thing that he said in his monologue, for example, let's try this
what
first
cut
one.
Is this?
This is Gervais 1.
Hello. And hello. Welcome to the 68th Annual Golden Globe Awards, live from the Beverly Hilton Hotel in Los Angeles. It's going to be a night of partying and heavy drinking. Or as Charlie Sheen calls it, breakfast. Wow. Whoa. So, let's get this straight. What he did was, he picked up a porn star, paid her to have dinner with him, introduced her to his ex-wife, as you do, went to a hotel, got drunk, got naked, trashed the place while she was locked in a cupboard. And that was a Monday. What did he do New Year's Eve?
So, and also, there was some consternation about him taking shots at the Hollywood Foreign Press itself. Let's look at Gervais 3.
And I'd like to quash this ridiculous rumor going around that the only reason The Tourist was nominated was so the Hollywood Foreign Press could hang out with Johnny Depp and Angelina Jolie. That is rubbish. That is not the only reason. They also accepted bribes. Happened was some of them were taken to see Cher in concert. How the hell is that a bribe? Really? Do you want to go and see Cher? No. Why not? Because it's not 1975.
So this doesn't, was it actual celebrities who were irritated, or is just this, like, the tight-ass press
I think it's mostly,
saying that people were irritated?
I think it's the tight-ass press thing. It's like if the next thing... there were a few celebrities who...
You said that Tom Hanks made some statement about it, but
yeah.
I mean, did he really seem upset, or was it like someone told him, like, Tom, you're the nicest guy in Hollywood, you have to get out there and do something about it, please?
I don't know. He and Tim Allen came out together, and they both seemed like they made it clear they were kind of looking down their nose at his attitude.
Really, a guy who's done time for dealing cocaine doesn't really have much room to look down his nose at anyone.
No, and what I wanted to play was specifically was Robert Downey Jr., because I always love him. First of all, you have to realize he came out on stage looking like Robert Evans. He was like way super tan and had these big, like, shaded sunglasses on. It was really strange. And the first thing he said when he came out, which was, you know, aimed at Gervais, was this.
Aside from the fact that it's been hugely mean-spirited with mildly sinister undertones, I'd say the vibe of the show is pretty good so far, wouldn't you?
That's fantastic. Good for him.
So then this is his introducing, basically, he was giving the award for Best Actress in a Comedy or Musical. And he turned, and I think he may have written this himself, because he managed to turn his giving the award out into an extended I would do her joke. The women who were up for the award were Annette Bening, Anne Hathaway, Angelina Jolie, Julianne Moore, and Emma Stone. And so here is...
I don't know if an actress can do her best work until I've slept with her. Julianne. Told her that I was working with strange new feelings that were confusing me, Angie. Only to have her blow me off halfway through the shoot like it never happened, Annette. Casually mentioned that her boyfriend is coming for a location visit because he misses her and what they have is real, then have the gall to invite me to join them at a three top for dinner, Anne? Why? Now, I'm not trying to creep anyone out, but where's Emma? I think I got some for us. It's kind of like a Blue Valentine thing, but not age appropriate. Now, I'm not saying that my theory doesn't hold water, but somehow all of these women rendered exquisite performances without a shred of help from me. So I guess I'm just saying, if I could, I'd give it to all five of you.
It's fantastic.
At once. The award, right here, center stage, in front of my wife, the audience, and millions of viewers. Here are the nominees for Best Actress in a Motion Picture.
Awesome. That is great. And the thing about it, I love guys who do that, because first of all, you got to figure if you're Robert Downey Jr., like, what could they possibly threaten you with at this point that, like, is worse than what he has already gone through in his – I mean, that guy's just – you know, he's just gone through – so many weird, dark, personal tunnels. Do you remember the time he was just, like, waking up in random kids' beds?
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, what are they possibly – but the thing is, the great thing is that that's all – it is so much a part of his public persona that there's really nothing – There's really nothing with which he can be threatened, especially because deep down everybody knows that he's a brilliant actor and that he's managed to have a convincing second and third act in his life.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, and he, having been through all of that, knows better than anybody that it's just, you know, like in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't really matter what anybody says about you or what fun is poked at you or what, you know, or like what kind of knocks you take in public. So anyway, good for him. That's and the thing about the Ricky Gervais deal is, that's why I asked if it was the celebrities themselves or if it was the journalists, because it really is. I mean, it's relatively tame, and it's certainly tame compared to what you'd hear like an actual roast or something. You know? Yeah.
Well, it's like when Colbert did the White House press.
Yeah.
So, you know, you hire Ricky Gervais, you're going to get Ricky Gervais. You hire Stephen Colbert, you're going to get Stephen Colbert.
And you hire Ricky Gervais 2 years in a row. Yeah. That's the other thing. Yeah, you hire him twice.
And they have, you know, and it's not like he's working in a vacuum. He works with writers. There are obviously people who are approving his jokes ahead of time. Like I mentioned before, though, there was this when Tom Hanks and Tim Allen came out, it was the only moment where he read his introduction for them off of a card instead of going off the teleprompter. And it really seemed like somebody had said, okay, you know the really nasty thing you were going to say about Tom Hanks? We don't say bad things about Tom Hanks.
So they just scribbled it out and handed him something
yeah,
else.
Yeah, so he had this thing where he said, you know, one guy has done this, and he was in this, and he was in these award-winning things and all this. And the other is Tim Allen. And that was his whole intro. But it was like at the last minute, they were kind of like, no one in Hollywood insults Tom Hanks.
Well, he must – Gervais must figure that his time – just because he is funny, but it's a specific kind of angular, you know, it is a very British kind of humor. So I wonder if he figures that with The Office sort of on its last legs anyway, that his time as you know, as a Hollywood force, as a comedic player is sort of, you know, limited anyway, that eventually American show business is just going to get sick of him and they're going to boot him out. And so he might as well just make the best of it.
One of the interesting things about, for me, watching the Golden Globes this year is the entire time I was watching it, I was on Twitter, and I don't usually do that. And it's interesting to watch people twittering about something while you're watching it at the same time as they are. And I'm sure sports fans do this all the time. But it's interesting when you see people notice things that you noticed and that, like, maybe you just, like, was that just me?
Right.
But, you know, like, when Annette Bening won for the movie The Kids Are All Right, which is about a lesbian couple, the camera cut to Jane Lynch. And we're like, really? Really? They were
That's
like,
fantastic.
Is there a lesbian we can go to? Who's a lesbian?
Lesbian. Camera 5.
Awesome. You know, the thing about the internet is that the internet is one... The internet is one giant sort of floor sweeper, you know, for your mind and for things like that. Little tiny moments that in an earlier era would have just either been noticed by nobody, or they would have gone underneath the radar, or they would have had in a blink, and they would have been, you know, they would have vanished, and, you know, and nobody would have been sure if they had actually seen that happen.
Yeah, or we'd have all been stuck with self-important twits talking about how awful Ricky Gervais was.
Exactly.
And now what happens is then later when Jane Lynch wins her award, you know, there's like five of us who jump on at the same time to go, I don't see the camera cutting to Annette Bening.
Right.
You
know. Awesome. Do we have anything else from the Golden Globes?
Not really.
I think we have do we have something from Natalie Portman?
We do. I do.
And then I got this thing about Oprah eating 30 pounds of macaroni and cheese. We could just do that. We could skip right to that. That's what his name, Piers Morgan.
Let's do that.
So this is from Piers Morgan. This is the guy that replaced Larry King. So I guess, is that show air tonight? It must. They don't shut things midweek. It must start tonight.
It's CNN. They'll do whatever they want, and Nobody will continue to watch it.
So I guess this Piers Morgan, who's the guy who's from the X Factor or whatever, and so he's taken over for Larry King, and his first interview, I believe, is Oprah Winfrey, who, by the way, can we just acknowledge, you know, I really love Oprah, and I'm just a huge... I am consistently in awe of Oprah as marketing force, because you know that it's not one of those things. You know, she's not like a teen idol where she sits there and there's a room of guys around her figuring out what she will do. You know that that is her.
Yeah.
You know, and she obviously has advisors, and she has, you know, people she works with, and she obviously has, you know, sort of trusted confidants and business partners. But you know that she is the driving force, just like Martha Stewart is. And, you know, what a weird and great world we are living in right now, where you've got, like, on the one hand, Martha Stewart, and on the other hand, Oprah Winfrey, you know, who were – I mean, Oprah Winfrey, I think she is the wealthiest woman on earth at this point.
So.
You know, and it's just, you know, it is a much different world than we had 100 years ago, in a really glorious way. And so it's fantastic to see. And plus that her media empire, she's like Mom's Friendly Robot Company or something. It just continues to, like, expand and expand. Her new network – is actually just called the OWN Network, which is great and works on like several different levels, because I think it's actually – it's the Oprah Winfrey Network, which also works as like my own network. And plus, it's also just a sort of a subtle They Live style command. You know?
I own you. I'm Oprah.
And also, like, I guess purchase network – consume the yes. network was not available. So – but she talked about doing the movie Beloved, which was a huge – you know, just a huge box office failure. And I think if I've got the cut right, I think this is her talking about – about eating massive amounts of macaroni and cheese. Continuing today's theme, by the way, as a salve to her psychic wounds.
How much macaroni did you eat?
Oh, I ate about 30 pounds worth. I'm not kidding. And I literally, I would have to say, it's the only time in my life, and I use all life experiences to teach me, the only time in my life I was ever depressed.
So the great thing about Oprah, too, is that not unlike Mom from Mom's Friendly Robot Company, she has – and it's like even like – you know, like I know better and I still fall for her Jedi mind trick of just like that she's just a country girl. She's just a simple woman with a – you know, getting on TV and talking to the folks, talking about things that normal people care about.
She's just like us.
Well, it's like when they do the, that jazz of her – of the O magazine where, you know, she's been on every cover. She has been on every cover of every issue of Oprah magazine. And at one point, somebody like Katie Couric or somebody asked her, so like, well, what is up with that? Why, you know, because, you know, you always talk about how you are at heart a kind of a shy, retiring person. Why are you on the cover of every single copy of your magazine? You've never found. And Oprah just said, like, with just all the sincerity you could possibly muster, she said, well, you know, it's like you get up to deadline and it's like a lot of times we just, you know, we can't really, you know, we can't really find somebody for the cover in time. You know, and we're, you know, we can't really find anything for the cover that ties into the theme of what we're talking about in that issue. And so, you know, when they use me, it's just because that we're just not really able to, you know, there's just nothing else available, really. And it's like, and she just, and it's like she knows it's a lie. Katie Couric knows it's a lie. I am sitting at home. We all know it's a lie. But she just puts it on the table and does it with just like this, you know, the most, you know, the most angelic smile. And, you know, and you suddenly realize why it is that she kind of owns the entire planet. Because she just doesn't. And it's like.
Because while you're grinning like that, she's eating your heart, like just eating your entrails.
Yeah. And it's like, and plus nobody.
And mac and cheese.
And nobody will ever tell her like, well, you know, Oprah, you're kind of full of it. Like, you know, that's kind of a load of crap you're peddling. Like no one will ever say that
no.
to her. So that is part of her genius.
For one thing, you would immediately disappear.
That's, you know, she and Hillary Clinton have the same lime pit into which their enemies vanish, I believe. We'll do the top five here in just a second. I should take this moment. We'll talk just a bit about our Name That Snack contest. Which I think you were here. Were you here when we were doing the Name That Snack last
yes.
week?
Yes.
And I forget.
People were getting it before you finished the question.
Seriously, I would say this snack was, and people would immediately, you know, s'mores, you know, or something. They would immediately get what we were talking about. I think that you were here the day we had Funyuns.
Yes.
Yeah, and it was like, that was where a listener, literally, a guy named Aaron, as Cheryl told me later, he just happened to be sitting around eating Funyuns while listening to the show. So he's like one of those guys that just like plays his shoe size in the lottery and wins like $10 skillion. So we're gonna amp this up a little bit. We should say that the contest is brought to you by EH Vending. You can contact them at ehvending.com or you can contact Josh, the owner, 360-816-1853 or sales manager James at 503-897-8204. So if you are somebody who owns or operates a business, if you have a vending service that is maybe just not getting it done, they're charging you too much, they want to raise the prices, if you're finding that you're just not responding to your needs, you leave phone calls or not getting back to you, or if you are starting a business or you've just never had vending service, and that's not just a vending machine, that's also coffee service, for example, that's also the big two and three door, three panel refrigeration units for sodas or whatever. If you have a deli and you want to have the thing at the back to stock the cold drinks, they can take care of all that stuff for you, and they're going to find a price that works for you, and they are longtime listeners as well. So they're, as Oprah would say, they're just good people. You can contact them at 503-897-8204 or 360-816-1853 or ehvending.com. So this was Cheryl's solution, and I like the way she thinks. Here's how we're going to do this. So what we're going to do now is it is a variation on the contest as we were playing it before. Each weekday during the show, we will give you one question. On Friday, as we are giving you the fifth question, once the fifth question has been given out, the first person who can then email us answers to all five questions, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, you will win a delightful cornucopia of consumable, wondrous
snacks,
things. I was just going to go nouns, but it seemed too vague, from EH Vending. So we will give you one question Monday, one Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. On Friday, as soon as the question is uttered, the first person to respond to snack, that is S-N-A-C-K, snack, at rickemerson.com, will win this gift basket from EH Vending. Don't respond before
that. The first person to respond
with all five correct answers. Yeah, you got to have all five correct answers. And again, don't bother answering earlier in the week. You got to wait until Friday. And if you were the first person to respond with all five correct answers, then you will win this. Today's question, the first question for the week, that is today, Monday, January 17th. What company introduced the vending machine to America in 1888? Now, we're not going to pretend that these aren't, you know, searchable or Googleable, you know, Googleable, whatever. That's, you know, you can look them up, you can, you know, ask around, whatever. It is the first person to correctly answer all five of these in a single email on Friday. You know,
is the answer the Home Depot?
Yes.
I thought I would try, like, the guy last week. If got your Home Depot coffee
cup here. For Micah, yes, you can ask on the streets. You can take it out in the back alleys and the byways of your hometown and, you know, down to the docks. See what the guys down there have to say. So that is Monday's question. What company introduced the vending machine to America in 1888? Again, don't answer today. You got to answer Friday when the fifth question for the week is given out. That is snack at rickemerson.com. Brought to you by ehvending.com. ehvending.com. Who's ready for the top five?
I am.
Hurrah. Me. Here's your top five for Monday.
Actually, I'm not because I don't
have... It's in the Dropbox.
Oh.
Fire.
Counting is wonderful. Counting is marvelous. Counting's the best thing to do. Counting is happiness. Counting is ecstasy. I love to count, don't you?
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. Today's top five is, and again, mail a postcard for complete rules and regulations for this top five. But it is just songs about having a crush on a celebrity. And there's an asterisk there that leads to a lot of different explanations. There's a lot of things that didn't make the list that seems like they ought to have. There was something I put on the list this morning that I then took off because I realized that it referenced a celebrity and was about a crush, but it was actually not a crush on the celebrity. So these are songs about having a crush on a celebrity. And that is why there are only five. There is no honorable mention because number six, which I will tell you was Tim McGraw by Taylor Swift, I took off the list because, you listen to the lyrics more closely, it's actually not about having a crush on him. Tim McGraw is the soundtrack to her relationship with a young suitor. So.
And it is songs that are about having a crush on a specific celebrity.
Yeah.
Not just something like, you know.
Not whoever's on the cover of Globe this week.
Well, or Superstar.
By the Carpenters.
By the Carpenters.
Also considered, also discarded as not fitting the theme.
Yes.
So, if at this point, if you still need further explication, like, you know, that's your problem.
I'm sure they'll figure it out as we go along.
I'm just going to say, as you go out to the streets and ask around for the prize answer, you can also take your grievances about the top five to the same guy because, I'm only one man. Don Taylor, what is number five?
Number five is Bree Sharp, David Duchovny.
And so was it you that was not familiar with this song?
I was not familiar with this song.
But we've discussed this before, though. You have subsequently been made aware of this song.
Yes, I believe part of the reason we talked about it is because I have a huge crush on David Duchovny. I am curled
up in my room. Ryan White, you familiar with this?
I am not familiar with this.
Here's where the song first came to prominence. I mean, she is... In you know, to her credit, she actually is a pretty accomplished singer-songwriter, sort of in that Lisa Loeb kind of mode, and apparently has a small but very, very devoted following. But this song played during that "You're Experiencing the 20" at Regal Cinemas or whatever, because somebody was trying to make her a star. Pre-chorus here. But this was like between a Skittles thing and like an ad for a new Cuba Gooding Jr. movie. Yeah.
Over the trivia questions?
Yeah,
or...
exactly.
And then there's that guy who comes in with his smarmy voice going, "That was Bree Sharp, David Duchovny, available in record stores now."
And you could just hear like an envelope from Arista Records, you know, being handed from one person to another somewhere. I wonder though if
the same envelope I hear every time I see Switchfoot on ESPN.
Exactly. I wonder if she just had some moment of glorious clarity, though, where she realized that David Duchovny rhymed with "Why Don't You Love Me?" And immediately just, "I have to go home right now," and just went out. Because that I always think that with fortuitous rhymes, that it just came in a rush one moment. You totally know that David Duchovny nailed her like nobody's business. I mean, knowing what we know now about that guy and his personal impulse control issues.
He probably went straight from the movie theater to her house.
He probably, yeah.
Hi, are you the one that had that thing between the Skittles and the Skittles ad?
He probably called the agent. He's like, have her waiting when I get home. Just, I want her duct taped on the front porch. He's abducted my heart, and I'm falling apart from the looks out. It's like I saw Tori Amos one time, and she was talking about I think she did like some version of a Zeppelin song. She did like Thank You or something in concert. But Tori Amos told the story about growing up loving Robert Plant and just having a huge crush on Robert Plant. And then she said that years later she was recording a record and at the record plant, and he was in the next studio. And then she just sort of trailed off, sort of elliptically, like she kind of got lost in her own little moment on stage while she was telling the story. And it's like, and you just sort of knew that, like, if you're Tori Amos, and this was like maybe 10, 12 years ago, and Robert Plant is next door, like, you just have to F him. I mean, how can you not? I mean, I would. I mean, I'm just not, even if I was Tori Amos, me, Rick Emerson, I totally would. How could you, you know? I also am happy for Bree Sharpe that she still has a career and is out there kind of touring and doing her thing and continues to make records. I think she must have...
She gets pissed when people yell for this song?
I don't know. I love people like this because I always want to interview people like Bree Sharpe in a non-snarky way, like in a really sincere way, and just be like, do you wish you hadn't had this song, you know, or are you happy that it gave you some mainstream exposure and it let you do things that maybe you wouldn't have done otherwise? I am fascinated by people who have the one inescapable hit and how they feel about it. These are the top five songs about a celebrity crush. Dawn Taylor?
Number four is The Travoltas' Liv Tyler.
The Travoltas, who are from Norway.
And who apparently listened to a little bit of Ramones when they were
their songs are
their
all,
band.
Not unlike the Queers, the Travoltas, who I love, are exactly half Ramones, half Beach Boys. A lot of the songs have these like really insane layered 3- and 4-part harmonies, and then just a bunch of sort of recycled Ramones riffs.
Not to be confused with the Aerosmith videos by Steven Tyler that are largely the same thing.
Clearly with the same question at being asked. So these guys have, I think at the time they put out this record, they had never left Norway. They'd certainly never been to America. But with the exception of this and a couple of the other tracks, this is off an album called Endless Summer. They also did like a knockoff of the Beach Boys Party album, I think, as a follow-up to this. But all of their songs are about like surf and sun and sand and the beach and getting in your woody and going and like playing volleyball with some chick in a bikini. And it's like they had never been anywhere. They clearly are one of those bands that just see everything through the prism of Brian Wilson's California.
God bless America.
Yeah. Well, when you figure Brian Wilson never went surfing or went to the beach. And,
that's
you know.
True.
Doesn't know anything about cars.
This is Liv Tyler by the Travoltas. The record is Endless Summer. I really do strongly recommend picking that up. These are the top five songs about a celebrity crush. Dawn Taylor, what is our next song?
Number three, Matthew Sweet, Winona.
I love this song. Now, I don't know that this is true, but the story is that Winona Ryder, and this is about Winona Ryder, the story is that she, eventually this was brought to her attention by somebody, and that she was really, like, as you would say, skeeved out by the whole thing. Because it really, and I love Matthew Sweet, and I love this song, but the person singing the song, who I think is just Matthew Sweet, is more than a little pathetic and creepy.
Tried to call you, but the line was busy. Were you talking to a friend? When I tried again much later, I didn't want to let it ring again.
So I tapped your phone and hacked your email.
Problem backed by popular demand. Sometimes I want to keep it from you.
understand. Could you be my little movie star? Could you be my long lost girl? It's true that I don't really know you.
Cue the Hinckley moment.
Did he do a video for this, and does he have a copy of Catcher in the Rye in his back pocket?
It really is. And I mean, when this record, this is on the Girlfriend record, and the title track was sort of his big single, his entree into the alt-rock mainstream. And I remember hearing the song and just thinking it was really beautiful. And I'm a guy, as I've said before, it takes me forever to notice lyrics. I'm all about melody. And it wasn't until like the 70th time that I heard this, I thought, well, goddamn, this is unnerving. That I realized really what a strange sort of like, you know, like a guy just reading a copy of Crazed Embittered Loner magazine, you know, and cleaning a gun.
In the video, he's just like sleeping in his car across from her apartment building, going through her trash.
I think it was meant to be sort of sweet, and it is in a sort of weird way, but I think he meant it to be sweeter than it sounds, and I think somebody played it for her, and the story I always heard was that she was just like, yeah, he's going on my do not call, must not get within 15 feet
you
list.
You could probably get a restraining order with less than this.
Of course, with Winona Ryder, who just a couple of years ago was dating Al Pacino.
Well,
so it's sort of like...
Fair enough.
I think she has a pretty high tolerance for skis.
You could think you had a shot. These are the top five songs about a crush on a celebrity. Dawn Taylor?
Number two, Elton John, Candle in the Wind.
I went back and forth about this one. I didn't know whether to put this on the list or not, but then I realized you can't not, because...
Yeah.
Even though it's separated by a chasm of years, it is very clearly about being in love with Marilyn Monroe. And I mean, it's hard to hear it now, separated from you know, the whole Princess Diana thing. But I mean, there is no getting past the fact that it's just an amazingly beautiful song.
They whispered into your ear. They said you are the treadmill, and they made you change your name. Seems to me.
What was his deal with like wearing a powdered wig during this era? Because that's all I can ever picture when I hear this song. Same with the beauty mark, and he's like dressed like Alexander Hamilton.
Oh, there were all kinds of stuff he was doing there for a while, though. I mean, do you remember the concert where he came out dressed in the giant, like, Donald Duck mascot suit?
I do.
I'm really hoping he wears that when he plays that new basketball court down in Eugene coming up.
Here's the thing, though. Again, I am 74 years old. I saw him in concert during the Goodbye Yellow Brick Road tour.
And was it fantastic?
It was fantastic. Boy, it was the Los Angeles Forum, and...
I'm legitimately jealous of that.
It was one of the best concerts I've ever seen. He was amazing. Well, of course, I was... My friends and I were obsessed with this album, though, at the time.
Yeah.
This came out,
it's
and
a
we
flawless album.
We just played it over and over and over again. And then when he was coming to town, it was like, Mom, I have to have money to go to a concert. Mom, I'm going to die if I don't see Elton John. Mom. And she wanted to just kill me. And I think she finally just gave me money so that she didn't have to just smother me in my sleep so I'd shut up about it.
It's a perfect album. I mean, it really is. It is masterfully constructed. It's you know, you're talking about him playing in the big Donald Duck mascot outfit, and then when he went on the Muppet Show, he got all pissed off because they stuck him in the alligator suit to play Crocodile Rock or whatever. They put him in a big spongy crocodile
outfit. I am not a joke.
Yeah, you know, and he was just, I'm an artist, and they were like, yeah, okay, you know.
How dare you impugn my dignity? I'm Elton John.
Too literal.
You know, early on when I said that. I said that on this list were songs that were interesting, quirky, some that were creepy. And I think I said that there was one that was especially creepy. Improbably not the Matthew Sweet song. Dawn Taylor, what is number one?
Number one is Neil Diamond, Sweet Caroline.
Who knows why this is creepy?
I have no idea. I didn't realize this was about an actual person.
Neither did I. And I was actually, I was just sort of looking around.
Blame the Boston
Red Sox
for it being...
Is this about Caroline Kennedy?
It is about Caroline Kennedy.
I do know this. I did know this. It's about Caroline Kennedy. Yeah. You saw a photograph of her after her father had died.
Yeah, also she was 11.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just doing the math on that one.
And I thought it was just... I wanted to actually verify before we said that. Not that, like, you know, not that he cares what we think, but I just wanted to make sure that we weren't just passing along fibs. And there was actually a citation to an interview he did in 2007 where he did talk about writing it based upon seeing a photograph of her. And she was 11 years old and he was, you know, however old. But and that made that then prompted me to go online and look up the lyrics to think, well, maybe it's a song of just a chaste sort of friendship. No.
So he's a lot more like that Will Ferrell version of this character than we would like to admit.
Sort of puts a different slant on everything.
Makes it especially wonderful that they play this at every Red Sox game right there in Massachusetts at Fenway.
Well, they're not going to play Gary Glitter. That would be perverse.
It's one of those universal experiences, though, because Paul and Stern play this in concert. They do this, and it's that thing that they get to that part, and every single person in the audience goes, ba, 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 along with it. You just can't help it.
We should do a top five of song moments that everyone in the audience is, like, legally required to participate in, because I just thought of, like, three more.
Yeah, I thought, like, I have one. Yeah.
Do you want to do that for tomorrow?
Yeah.
Okay, so tomorrow, do top five moments in a song that everyone in the audience joins in on. Like, okay. It's that you just, you have to. There's not even any choice given. Awesome. Well, we are way over time here. We should get out of the studio and make way for Greg Nibbler and Sarah X. Dillon. You can check out a new episode of Fun Employment Radio tonight around 6 p.m. Pacific time. Ryan White, read him in print in the Oregonian, OregonLive.com/music.
Yep.
And in print and so forth. Anything coming up in the paper of note?
Something later this week on a series of benefit shows that the Pickathon people are doing for Buckman Elementary that's going to include a live streaming pass. If you don't want to go out to the show, you can watch it from your computer, it sounds like.
Awesome. Read them in print in the Oregonian, online at OregonLive.com. Ryan White. We also want to thank our other guests, including Mr. Aaron Duran, GeekInTheCity.com. At the news desk, Dawn Taylor, advanced science and technology provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. As always, thank you for listening to the Rick Emerson Show, made possible by a generous grant from you. It is Monday, January 17th, 2011, and that is the frequency, Kenneth. Thank you for listening. Be safe. See you all tomorrow. Bye now.